We are Brightside, home of the
VJ, buddy, don't worry about a thing. We're talking home theater here.
Yeah, you know? I know.
It's interesting all of us. Let's have fun.
Yeah, I wonder. I always wonder, like, I'll listen, and I'm like, I wonder if they feel like they're not very entertaining.
No.
I told my wife, I go, you know, I feel like no one's going to want to be, they're going to be like, that one's boring. Let's just turn that one off.
No. And it's like, and that's because I think we all bring a different aspect to it, you know, just like John, Steve, and I, we all come at it from a different perspective. And that's what I think is most interesting about having all of you guys on, all the listeners on, is because we all very, very similar, but we all come at it from a different perspective. We all have different histories, but similar histories. You know, we all have maybe the same starting point or whatever it is, there's so many variables to it. And that's just like our own home theaters. There's so many variables to everything, right? And yeah, your opinion is just as valid. And maybe some people, you know, I'm not gonna lie, maybe some people be like, yeah, this is kind of boring. But then somebody else is like, oh my God, that's me.
Yeah, right. There's a lot more smarter people than me out there, that's for sure.
Hey, I'm not, same here, right? And it's like, we're not here for them. We're here for the people that are just like us. So let's have fun. Yeah. And that's what we do.
You see the
Mos Eisley. Nice. Of Tatooine. Like, there's a lot of other Mos Eisleys around there. No droids, live music. That's awesome. Is that a CD? The middle piece?
Okay.
It looks like just the logo. It's round, but it looked like it was like a CD where it says of Tatooine. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, that's right. What's it saying? Oh, Cantina. There you go. Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. Where did you find that?
My wife gave it to me for Christmas.
Yeah. I know. They're getting creative now, huh? Like, our families to try and buy us home theater stuff. It's like, my kids are the ones that found these disc plates and stuff.
Oh, yeah. So
they gave me those a couple of years ago. And they're little. You know, you could see by the size of them there that they're only like, 14, 16 inches tall, something like that. So they're little things, but you know, I'm running around a room on my wall, so they're like, these are nice, and they're just magnets you put on the wall, and you can hang up different ones, so.
Oh, okay. So it's like a frame that you can swap out.
Well, yeah, what I have them on, I'll show you.
I see.
Have them on a little stand, like this, just so they can stand behind me, but they can, because they're metal, you put a magnet on the wall. They come with a magnet about that size.
Oh, I see. Okay, that's pretty slick.
And you put that magnet on the wall, and then you can go up to your wall, and you can change them out.
Nice.
So it's pretty cool,
yeah. Okay, yeah. And you don't have to worry about it, the subwoofers knocking it off the wall or anything.
No. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's, okay, hang on a second. Yeah, if it's in your room. I actually have a bunch of them. I have the entire... Well, not the entire. I have the three original Star Wars movies. I have the Top Gun Maverick ones, the helmets that maybe you've seen in the older YouTube videos.
Yeah, I recall seeing that before. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I have Maverick, Goose, and Iceman, their helmets. What else do I have? I've bought, that's what they gave me originally for my birthday, was the Top Gun ones. And then I bought, I have Lawrence of Arabia. I have the Dark Knight.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I have all different arts, but they're all in my stairway coming down to the basement. So like, as you're going down, there's movie posters and that stuff. So, but yeah, this is funny how they're out of ideas to get us stuff. They can't get us gear, right? Then I wouldn't want them getting me gear, 'cause one, it's too expensive, and two, they don't know what I want. So they get creative, and that, like, just like your t-shirt. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm pretty hard to buy stuff for, I think, because I'm kind of picky, you know?
Well, aren't we all?
So, I mean, you know, so my wife just buys exactly what's on my list, you know. Sometimes she'll get a little different thing, but she usually tries to stay She's afraid to get me something I won't like or something. So,
yeah. Yeah, they got, my wife got me speakers years ago, a few years ago, okay. My NHTs. Yeah. They were in my Amazon, and she just clicked on them at Christmas and bought them, and I didn't know. I never looked at, like, save for later. They were down there, and she just scrolled through, and they were on sale, and
that was one of those things on your list, like, no one's ever going to get me this, but I'll just put it on anyway. It's my wish list, right?
Yeah, but it wasn't even there for that. It was more of a, like, all right, I was shopping around for them. I wanted to upgrade. So I had clicked on them, and I was like, oh, it's getting to be Christmas time. And I'm like, let me move them down below. If they're still there after Christmas, I'll get them for myself. And then Christmas morning, there's all these big boxes, and I'm like, and they were, what were they? They were secondhand or used, supposedly. And then they came in, and they were refurbished. They were, like, pretty much looked brand new, right from NHT.
And that's the ones you have now?
That was the NHTs.
Oh, that was the. I thought you had the NHTs.
The NHTs are what I had before, and now I have the SVSs. When one of those speakers actually went bad, remember?
I thought you're still testing out the SVS. You haven't decided on it yet, have you?
I haven't, but I have the SVSs installed right now. I just haven't. Oh, okay. I still have other rounds to go, but I haven't gotten to that. But that was the NHTs she bought me years ago.
Okay, so you basically decided on three. Like, how long did it take you to figure out the three you wanted to test? Like, I'm sure you bringing this up on the show, you probably got a million people going, oh, you should try this, DJ. You should try this. You should try. I thought, oh man, I bet everybody's just going, you need to try this. You know,
yeah.
I've been inundated with like 50 different speakers to try.
Yeah, it was really, I mean, it's kind of slowed down a little because I haven't done any more. I'm sure when I get to the next round and I start talking about it more, it'll perk back up. But yeah, I did. And I've even said that on the podcast. I've been like, it's like I was hesitant to even say anything, but it is fun for the podcast. And I did get the one recommendation when Johnny Speakers was on quite a few podcasts ago, like maybe a month or so ago when he was on by himself. And he was like, and I'd already said, like, this is what I get. And he goes, all right. He goes, I got one suggestion for you. It's not a brand, but maybe try to find a high-end speaker that's considered neutral. And you know what I mean? Cause I'm thinking the SVSs are a little brighter, but he's like something like maybe twice the price or more than NHT and see if you see a difference there. Right. And I'm like, that's an interesting idea. So I did like that suggestion, but, to answer your question on like how I came up with, the Focals and the, what's the other one that I'm going to be doing? Kefs.
Oh, Kefs.
The Kefs. They're all pretty much in the same price area, and they're all
okay. So within your budget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
They're not extremely more, like, they're more than the SVSs. I think each of them are more, but only by like maybe $100 or a couple hundred a speaker or something like that. So it's not obscenely different, and they're all considered roughly the same kind of sound that I'm looking for, which is a neutral but maybe a little brighter, or maybe I don't know. I'll find out when I actually do the AB on the next ones, because to be honest, I wasn't expecting SVS.
What's the next one coming up? Are you gonna do it for like a month or so, and then you're gonna switch
Yeah, it's like as I said, I'm like, I have a lot going on right now, so I need to build the stands. So the next So the next thing I'm going to do is actually go back and AB the NHTs, which I never got to do. I'm just going off of just from memory of NHTs went bad, swap them out, put SVS in and be like, "Holy crap, this is different and better." So it'll be fun to go back and actually do the AB. So that's what I'm going to do first.
Because I remember you do want to do the switching where you can switch A and B. Yeah.
What did I buy? Like two.
You bought some kind of switch or something, didn't you?
It's like almost $250 worth of switchers.
Oh, okay.
So that I can do it quicker than having to go and unplug and replug. So I should be able to do it pretty quickly with this. And then that's it. And then
you should have your wife do the switching. So well, you won't know which is which, right?
There, yeah, that's that suggestion. I've had that suggestion. Kinda, yeah. Yeah. And go back and forth and yeah, just let me know as I'm listening. I'll do all my scenes and stuff, and I'm really looking forward to it. And yeah. I think once I do the NHT one, everything's done. All the stands will be done. Everything's done. That's the only thing slowing me down is I actually have to customize the front stage a little bit to be able to do it quickly in the way I want, the right way, you know, what I'm considering to be the right way to make it fair. So once that's done, it should go pretty quick from there. I'll do the NHTs. I already know that SVSs are beating the NHTs. So I'm just doing it for my own information to hear the difference. But once I do it, I'll go right next to the next one, which is probably, I think, the Focals. I'll order them up and I'll probably do it for like, if I don't hear a huge difference, I'll put the Focals in place and listen to them for like a month and see if I notice a difference, if it's better, worse, indifferent, whatever, and then make my decision from there before I, you know, if I have to ship them back or, you know, or not. I mean, like I said, SVS is being really cool. They're allowing me to keep these
kind of nice,
longer. So,
you send them back, they'll just use your name. It'll be like DJ audition these speakers.
Yeah.
We're going to sell it a little bit more in retail.
Right. Yeah, exactly. This is DJ's tested them and went with something else.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You like them so much now.
Yeah, so and that's what I think. I mean, they're all good brands. So if I don't choose the SVSs, the ones that, you know, it's not like it's bad, and it's a personal choice too. There's and as I've said before, so they understand that, and they're, you know, that I'm very grateful that they're allowing this to happen, because if it didn't, I would have had to ship them back already, and then be like, okay.
They have great customer service. That's
don't they?
Yeah. I mean, really good customer service there. So that's one of the good things about them is, you know, for sure they're going to take care of you if you got something, you know, or whatever.
Right. And that's how I reached out to them, and why I reached out to them is when I first started the podcast and I was like, these guys were so great with me as just the consumer. I've always just dealt with them as the consumer. And then it was like, hey, I have a podcast. I'd love to get you guys on and find out how you test this stuff. And that's when I met Larry and Nick, and they came on and we were talking scenes. That's what I'm doing, the scenes and stuff.
I remember that.
Yeah. So it was their customer service that drew me to even ask them. Right. And I was like, oh, okay. So, you know, and every time I got call and deal with it, it's like, now it's like, I can email Nick and just be like, Nick, what do you think? Oh, wait a minute. And I've forgotten. Oh yeah. Just call customer service, which I did with these speakers when I installed the SVSs because of the back port.
Oh, right.
The rear port.
I was thinking about that, you know, about that port being back there and how you would consider that and all that kind of stuff. Cause I think the Focal, is it the Focal? I think has a front facing port.
I think
the one
of the models. I think it does.
I thought you said models earlier, and I might have looked it up, but I thought that one had a front port on it.
Yep.
I think the KEF is a rear port though too, if I recall.
Yeah. But in my cabinets, the cabinets that I have set up for my speakers now, SVS was like, you'll be fine. I told them my suggestion, and like I said, I just literally called the helpline and they were great. I didn't say who I was. I didn't, not that my name carries any credibility. Yeah. I mean, Nick knows who I am because I book stuff through them. Right. So it's like, hey, when you and Larry want to come on, so they know who I am, but that he does, but SVS doesn't. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that they were great. And he was like, no problem. He goes, I said, you know, setting a higher crossover at 100, he said that'll probably take care of it. And he's like, you're not going to damage them. And you know, just listen for what you want. And I haven't noticed any, you know, what you would expect to hear is some like bloating in the bass and stuff. And there wasn't, and there isn't. And I would expect that when I go to my, you know, new theater where I have an open space for these to breathe a little bit more, that maybe they'll even improve more, you know, So yeah. Who knows if they're the ones, whichever I think of these lines, and I think you're correct. They're all ported in one way or another. So the new open space is going to allow them to breathe a little bit more. So
I think the Kefs, I think they come with a port plug, if I recall. That might be the only one that has the plugger in it.
Yeah.
You know, I think if they give it to you, I guess if you place it close to the wall or something.
Yeah.
But,
yep.
Well, that's exciting, huh? So yeah, you've probably been waiting to get that started too, but I guess you said you're doing some work at your daughter's house or something. Is that?
Oh yeah. Kinda... Yeah. That's what I do. That has slowed down substantially. It was about 2 months where it was like, we had a lot of work to do to try and get them into the house just so they could move in. Cause we did a lot of demo and reconstruction to redesign the interior of the house, add rooms, add a room is, you know, anyways. So there was a lot of no spare time, you know, to get this done so that they can actually move in. Now that they're in, I'm just working. I go there on Saturdays. So I work my regular job and then I go there and work for a few hours on every Saturday and that's it. So that's kind of helped, but you know,
yeah.
So busy.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. So how about you? What's popping to your head right now? Like home theater. What did you want to discuss with me?
The way I've been thinking lately is I'm an audioholic, you know? It's a sickness.
Are you?
Oh, yeah. I'm always I'm always looking at stuff going, oh, this would be cool to check this out. You know what I mean? And all kinds of, you know, I love that stuff. And now that I'm older and I have more disposable income, it's not a problem to buy some of this stuff, you know? But I like, yeah. But you know how it is. It's like you're always sitting there thinking, oh, what could I buy that, you know, just to get your fix, right? Oh, maybe I could do this, and you know, maybe I can update my amp or something or whatever. Yeah. It's always something, right?
Yeah. So I said that. I don't know if I said it privately or if I said it on the show just this past week about John, because he does that. We all do, right? And you get X amount of dollars available for something, and next thing you know, you're like, what can I buy? And it's like, he's done that with me. And it's like, he'll just text me and be like, and this goes as far back as since we've had texting. And before that, it was just telephone calls. But it's like, you know, he'd be like, what do you think of this? I'm like, what do you need that for? You know, it'd be a gimmicky thing or something. He goes, I just got to buy something.
I know. That's what I'm saying. You know? It's like, if I wasn't married, I'd probably have a basement full of stuff, you know, because half the time, you know, if I do order something and I'm like, oh, you know, I'm going to try this out. My wife's like, where are you going to put that box at? You know, and it's like, oh, geez. So that makes me like stop and think like, okay, how big is the box? This is going to come in. And
how quickly can I get the box cut up?
Yeah.
And, you know, so that I can, or if I can cut it up, because sometimes I like for years and years, I saved every single empty box because you never know when you're going to put the receiver back in the box.
I do that. And, yeah.
Yep.
Do you break them down though? Like, do you,
I'm starting to, maybe not like the higher end equipment. Like, my Lumigen, I didn't, Kaleidoscape stuff, anything like that. I'm like, all these boxes. Cause when you get to like I didn't do it when I got my Rotel years ago.
Oh, okay.
That was, you know what, for me, it was like when you get to that next step in what your dream evolution is. Right. And you're like, the box is as important to me as the gear. And it's like, I just wanted, all right, I'm going to put this away and display. It's not on display, but for me, I just like, there it is.
You know? Well, I like to have it just so like when I'm done with that, I can put it in and then maybe sell it or whatever. And it's in the original box, you know, it makes it easier to ship or whatever if need be. And then if I ever bought anything used, It's always nice when it does come in the original box, right? You know, instead of just some plain box wrapped in bubble wrap or whatever, you know?
Yeah. So. I did that with my last projector. When I had it. So I bought my new, my 4K projector. And then my last projector, which was the Vivitech, 5080, I think it was. And that it went right back in the box when I got my Sony. And it sat there for like a year and a half in the box. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. And then the whole Zapedi thing came up and I was like, wait a minute, I can sell my Vivitech. So I threw my Vivitech up on eBay and I got like, I think I got like $1,400 for it, which it paid for the Zapedi. So yeah. I was like, there you go. I was like, and I had the box, the original box, the packaging that all of the instructions came in. Everything was still in it. And, you know, even the batteries. Batteries were still in the because I just used regular batteries and I just put everything back. Yeah. And so when I took the pictures and put it on eBay, everybody was like, oh, look at this. I'm like, yeah.
Right. See, I say it makes it easier, you know.
Yeah.
Just so they know too, if you're going to ship it somewhere, they know, hey, if you're shipping in a regional box, you know it's probably going to be protected.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you do it yourself, you never know who, if they're going to do it good enough or whatever.
Right.
So. Yep. Yeah, that's my thing lately just being like, nope, I'm not gonna buy this. Do I want to buy this? No, I'm not gonna buy it. But
what was your latest purchase?
I guess my Kaleidoscape. I guess.
Oh.
Yeah.
Which one did you get?
So I've had that for about a year. I got mine right around the same time you did. Mm-hmm. I want to say
you get the 6 or the 12 or bigger.
I got the 12, yeah.
Yeah.
And now the 12's like, it's gone now. They don't even have a 12 anymore. They have a 22 now.
The 22, and I just texted it to John last week. The 22 is the same price as the 12 was when we got our 12.
Is it? I thought, wait a minute.
It's on sale at Audio Advice for $12.99.
I think they got.
For the 22.
I think it's like, I want to say it was like $1,500 with the. The player.
What's that?
You know, the player you got to have to play the Strato.
Oh, yeah. The player itself.
Yeah. So but it comes with both for like $1,500 or I'm sorry, $15,000. $1,500. That'd be nice.
yeah, exactly. I'm like, where did you find that sale? I'm like, I'll put a couple in the other rooms of my house.
I want to say I got my, mine was like 10, I think, when I got. I think they had some deal going on or something.
It was $11.99.
Or maybe that was it. I don't know. It was close to that. Yeah, it was
$11.99. But now their Audio Advice is selling it for the 22 terabyte is selling for $12.99, which is right around relatively the same price as the 12 used to be. Yeah, that's not bad.
I mean,
but I think the 12 is now discontinued, I think.
Yeah. So you're getting almost double the space for a little bit more.
Yeah.
Of course, you know. Kaleidoscape is just the stratosphere of prices, but I don't have any regrets. It's definitely worth it. I'm like you. Like first time I saw that thing, I was like, oh, I gotta have this thing. You know, 20 years ago, whatever it was, I'm drooling over that thing. And but it finally came, you know, to a point where it's like, I think I can do this now. You know, I was going to get that other one, the one that had everything all together. I can't remember the name of the model now, but it had the drive in the player kind of all in one.
Oh yeah. The Strato S.
That was the Strato S.
Cause you got the Strato C you have to have a Strato C to run anything else, but the Strato S, but it's slower. It doesn't have the same download speed. That's cheaper, what Nelson though. Has that one. Yeah, it was. It was
cheaper.
Yeah.
I don't remember like what the price was, but I was looking at the 12 and then the rep or the guy out here, he's like, they're going to be coming out with, like, this one's going away and they're going to be coming out. So he's like, you can either buy this one cheaper or go with this other one. And so I decided I wanted to go with the faster one, you know. But the other one was nice, the Strato S, if you wanted to kind of get into it for kind of cheap. It's cheap, I guess, for Kaleidoscape.
Yeah, people are buying them on eBay now for like $4.
Yeah.
You can buy a Strato S for $4 or under, actually.
Yeah.
They're selling them on eBay because then they're doing that to upgrade to whatever the Terra system or something. So you see a lot of, you can find them, you can find decent deals.
The used market's pretty good.
Yeah. And especially for that stuff, you know, gets you into the, ecosystem, gets it into your system and then you just start building from there. And, I've talked about it. Joe Klosnick was the one that brought, because I had talked about Kaleidoscape and he knew, he put me in contact with Brett Bjorkqvist, who was working at Kaleidoscape at the time. And Joe wrote to me, and he's like, as a listener, he's like, hey, would you want to talk to somebody from Kaleidoscape? I'm like, sure. I'm like, that sounded like a great idea to me. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, because I'd already been talking about it since I started the podcast, and I thought it was interesting. When I got my Zapedi, I was like, all right, this is the closest I'm going to get to a Kaleidoscape for right now. And then I remember the first time I had Brett on, I was like, I'm trying to get through this and not spend our family savings.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was funny. And he told me about a few things that I didn't know at the time, but that made it kind of made it enticing. And at the time they did have the Strato S was still mm-hmm. on. And I was like, oh, I'm just outside of even being able to afford that. And we held on for a while, you know, I was like, and then obviously with COVID and everything and I said it when I bought mine, I'm like, my wife finally was just like, she kind of caved, like, all right, we haven't been on vacation. We've got this money saved for that. We're not gonna use it for a while. Get what you want. But, all right. I was like,
but you're going to owe me somewhere down the line. I'm going to want
exactly right. Exactly. So now I'm building their house. No.
Yeah.
Whoops. But yeah, I know it was like that cartoon thing. Like, get what you want. It's like, okay, there's a hole in the wall while I'm running to get what I want.
Yeah. You're like, but before she changes her mind, you better
get it. Yeah. Like, it was, she's so funny. She's so like cute where she's just like, now, why is this better? to you're you? Like,
if I explain it to you, you still wouldn't understand.
Right. Even my son is like, he likes the Zapedi. He's like, he's younger. He's not as into home theater as I am, as we are, right? And he doesn't get the niceties that I do appreciate. And he's just like, discs are fine. He also doesn't have the money to justify it, right? It's like, that's a lot of money so that I don't have to get up.
I mean, I've 20 something years I've been wanting one of those, so
yeah.
I tinkered around with the other stuff, you know, like creating your own server and whatever it is that they use. I mean, it was just too much of a, trying to rip this stuff was just a big pain. And then when 4K came out, you had to have the special, like, still even to this day, you still got to have like a special drive that can read it. Like, most of them can't, like, sometimes the firmware has been updated and you can't do it. I think you can maybe, they sell some of them on eBay with the right firmware or something, but I'm just like, I don't want to go. The older you get, you know, it's just like, I don't want to mess with that.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's just like, the Kaleidoscape is just so, no one realizes, you know, some people may, that's fine if they do their own server and stuff.
Yeah.
That's fine. But I mean, it's just so much. I mean, I don't have to worry about, oh, is this, you know, is it going to, am I going to rip a disc and it's going to like
fail?
2 hours later, it failed. You're like, oh, I got to start all over again, you know?
Right.
Like, I'm like, I just do, you know, and I did mess with it for a while and it was just too much trouble. You know, it's just like, I just don't, but I know people do it successfully and stuff like that. But for me, you know, I was just like, nah, I'm not going to do it. And, you know, I still wanted the Kaleidoscape, and that was, you know, maybe 8-10 years ago when I was messing with all that stuff. And, I couldn't afford it back then, you know, so, I just continued with the discs but now the Kaleidoscape, it's a game changer. I really like it. I still get discs, you know, because they don't have the boutique discs.
Yes. Right.
So I'll get a lot of those. So I still get discs, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's like, if it's something that I really want, and I said it on last week's show, that I'm like, one of the other advantages is it gives you access to, it gives you the ability to have access to the best possible quality anywhere, right? Mm-hmm. And that means sometimes the best quality is on a disc, but sometimes it's on Kaleidoscape. So if that interests you, that's another reason that to help you, if money is an issue, justify it.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely fall in that category as well, because, you know, I love comparing and being like, oh, look at this. But But now, like you said, you're getting older. It's like I'm finding myself being like, look, I have the Jurassic Park disc. It's in DTS:X, and Kaleidoscape is in 4K, the original Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
It's just in DTS 5.1.
Yeah, 5.1, yeah.
But if I'm sitting in my theater and I'm, you know, all of a sudden just like get the, hey, oh, I haven't seen Jurassic Park in a while. Is it really worth getting up for the, because I've done the comparisons and the DTS:X is slightly better.
It's but still not pretty good.
Not a lot. I mean, you got to really nail it down to go back and forth. And, but that's what we are all about. I'm not trying to minimize that, right. But I get it. But at the same time, when you're like, do I really want to get up, walk across the room and do that to put in the disc? And then not, and then once, you know what it's like spinning up a disc, and it's like the Zapiti does this really well. I think Plex does too, where you can just hit play and there's no FBI warnings.
Anything. That, you know, when I play my Kaleidoscape a lot, and then, you know, occasionally I'll grab a disc or I'll get one of these discs that they're out from the studio or the little studios or whatever. And you put that in and you're like, oh my gosh, just give me the book. You know, you forget how much sit there and like, go, oh my gosh, come on. And it won't let you fast forward or whatever. I'm like, that's the dumbest thing. Like they block you from skipping over.
You know what? Yeah. I was watching, I started Raging Fire and for next week's show. And I'm like, I put the disc in and there were like two trailers that I couldn't skip. And I'm like, come on.
Oh, that was a recent one too?
Yeah, Raging Fire on Blu-ray. And it's Blu-ray with Atmos. And and I'm like, I just this morning, I was like, what the is going? And listen to us go on here. It's like, I mean, talk about first world problems. You're like, oh my God, I can't skip. But you do get used to that. You just push play and the movie starts, right? Whereas with the disc, you're like, all right, now I got to do this. Then you get into the menus, which are nice. I do like that. I mean, the menus, some of these active menus, you know, moving menus and stuff, those are pretty cool. But then once you do that, you hit play. And then once you hit play, now the FBI warning comes up. Or now all this, and you're like, oh boy. But here's where that's a benefit. If you're running 4K or something in a situation like mine, I don't know about yours, you got that HDMI handshake, and mine takes, you know, mine's pretty quick is from what I've experienced going elsewhere. It's still pretty quick, but still you lose, like I'm losing about 4 seconds and then everything comes on. So if it's a good, you know, on the Kaleidoscape, if it's a good opening with a logo and there's sound moving, I'll back it up and get that 4 seconds back. But with the disc, all you're missing is the FBI.
Yeah, right.
You know, so that's that kind of, you don't really care. But the Kaleidoscape, it just starts so fast. You're like, oh no.
Yeah. Mine's probably about the same. It's 3 or 4 seconds, you know. It's not too bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said, you just skip back if you want to or whatever. Because I mean, sometimes if I come back into a movie, you know, like you stopped in the middle or something.
Yeah.
I might go back a little bit on that because, you know, it starts a little bit past it. At least you can hear something going on, you know, before it pops up.
Yeah. You'll hear it and you'll be like, oh, all right, it's playing.
Yeah.
Here we go. And then it comes right back up.
Yeah. My even playing like streaming does that too. Whenever it switches
to
HDR or whatever, it has to sync up and stuff. So I think hopefully someday they'll get that to where it's pretty fast. I mean, my LG OLED, it switches pretty quick. It just blips for a second.
Yeah.
Don't you have like a regular TV? Do you have
I have an OLED upstairs. I have an OLED in my living room. Does your switch
pretty quick to HDR and stuff?
Oh, yeah. Well, here's what's really interesting. It hasn't come up before on the show. It's been about a month now, maybe even longer. My Apple TVs, I've abandoned the whole, you know, where you do match frame rate, try to get everything. It's still set for that. But you know the setting in Apple TV where you're not actually supposed to have it in HDR because that's forced HDR. That takes everything.
Right. Yeah.
So you're supposed to actually have it in SDR. And that's how you get your best possible content, right? You get the best version. And but the HDR, it's HDR all the time, and it's up. The Apple TV is up converting it, and whatnot, right? That's actually technically not the best for the, you know, if you're looking for the best possible quality. I think most of the listeners will agree, if you're looking for the best possible quality, it's not on Apple TV anyways, right? So yeah. Once I figured that out, and I've been going back and forth, and I've said it on the show, like The Mandalorian, the first season, I thought looked great out, and I don't touch everything. I like to run like my calibration on my projectors set to a reference level, you know, calibration. So mm-hmm. That's supposed to be right. And I don't like to tweak these. I don't like to bump and run things hot or run, you know, anything like that. So when I'm watching streaming content, I'm like, I can't. And then it dawned on me, I think second season of Mandalorian, I'm like, wait a minute, this stuff is compressed crap out of it. It's not, we don't know. There's so many variables in the pipeline here, literally, that what am I holding on to this reference idea for streaming? So that has since evolved in the last few months that I'm like, I just put it on HDR on my Apple TV, and I just run in it. Apple TV runs super smooth, super quick. My projector runs super smooth, super quick. It's not doing that flipping back and forth. Everything looks great. I don't notice the difference. It's not like if I'm going to go watch Top Gun, I'm not watching it on my Apple TV. I'm watching it on a disc, or I'm watching it on the Kaleidoscape, right? So yeah. It's only the streaming content that's getting compressed anyways. So let me smooth out the rough edges of what streaming is like anyway. So I've done that. And the way I discovered it is, for some reason in New England here, we have NESN, New England Sports Network, and I can get that in Dolby Vision HDR, 4K HDR. Huh. But it won't play that. It's a specific channel, NESN on Fubo. That channel won't play if it's in that SDR mode. It won't trigger the match frame rate.
Oh, really? No kidding.
Yeah. So the only way to do it is to actually, and it worked on my OLED. That's where I noticed it, on my OLED, to get Dolby Vision to play, I had to put it in HDR mode, the Apple TV in HDR mode. And then that channel would play. Otherwise, I get, we're looking for your video. I get a message on the screen saying it can't access the video.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah. Huh. So I can watch the Red Sox and the Boston Bruins in 4K HDR. I have to put it into that HDR mode on Apple TV. And while I did that, everything runs super smooth now. And I'm like, what the hell? Why am I switching back and forth? Just leave it on that. You know?
So when you turn it on, does it always output Dolby Vision? So it'll, like, anything, even if it's just regular HDR, it'll, like, convert it to Dolby Vision?
I guess, yeah. It's like, I don't know. It's not like everything looks blown out to me. Everything looks fine. On my projector, it doesn't say Dolby Vision. It just says HDR.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, obviously, right? On the projector, but on my, it's gonna be HDR, yeah.
Right, but on my Dolby Vision, I have two Dolby Vision televisions in my house. One's a Vizio in my bedroom, and then the other one's the Sony OLED in my living room. And to get, I mean, they just say Dolby Vision all the time. So that's what it's doing.
That's what I was wondering. I'm like, so it doesn't switch between HDR and Dolby Vision. It just stays at Dolby Vision then.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Pretty much, yeah.
Or on the projector's case, it'll just stays on HDR 10.
HDR, yeah. Just on HDR. So,
okay.
I mean, I'm sure it's a compromise, and what little bit of a benefit am I going to get in picture quality on already a compromised picture? So I'm like, why deal with the hassle? It's, you know, so that's, you know, I it hasn't come up. I keep meaning to bring it up every week, but we've been busy. We're having a great time, and it just didn't come up. And I'm like, not until I was talking with you, I'm like, oh yeah, I've done this for like a month or
that's hack of the week, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's actually a good one. That's the hack of the week, not the tweak, but yeah,
the hack.
But yeah, so I meant to tell Rob about that too. I'll have to, now that it's going to go public, I should tell him. But do how do you find streaming now compared to your, now that you're, you know, you've got the Kaleidoscape and stuff, and it's so much different, I should say.
Well, you know, it's still needed, right? Because there's a lot of content you just can't get, you know.
Of course.
On disc, or even Kaleidoscape for that matter. So, I mean, you know, I've been, I don't know about you, but I've been, I got the first Roku box when it came out, you know, and you could just, I think the only thing on it was Netflix. And they added, like, I think I was like on a Amazon.
What was that, like 15 program. Years ago, right? That was a long time ago.
Yeah, Roku. It was a long time ago. I mean, it was standard def, you know.
Yeah. My sister gave me one for Christmas. Yep.
I'll tell you one time Netflix sent me, this is before it came out. Netflix sent me a thing, said, hey, we're inviting you to go to do this. I don't remember what they called it now, where you consumer, you go, they show you something and you give them your. So I was like, oh, they're like, hey, we'll give you like so much credit on Netflix. And I'm like, what the heck, you know? So I went down to this place and then we had to sign an NDA, you know?
Oh, nice.
And so they showed us this streaming player, right? It was because, I don't know if you know the history, but Roku was actually Netflix is what started that company, basically.
Oh, and
that's the player that we saw was the, it was going to be like a Netflix player. Oh. And it was a combo player. They had it. The one they showed us anyway was a disc DVD plus the streaming device was all in one. So I think it got to a point where they didn't want to mess with it anymore, the hardware side of it. And so they kind of spun off the, I'm probably getting some of it wrong, but I think they kind of spun off that side of it. And Roku, I think, may have been another company that either bought it or was just something that was helping with it originally. So anyway, they came out with Roku that's why Netflix was on it originally. So anyway, that was pretty cool. So we had to, they asked us, you know, our opinions on, I don't remember if it was even functional. I do remember like one of the comments was, well, I was like, well, it's got to have 5.1 sound, you know, for it to be any good. But, I don't, you know, it didn't have that for a while. It took a while for,
no,
they had,
it was kind of, yeah, it was kind of neat when it first came out. And like I said, my sister gave me one for Christmas and me being the tech guy, I'm like, the hell is this thing? Right. Cause Apple TV didn't exist. Right. Fire Sticks didn't exist. Mm-hmm. Nothing was like,
so Roku was the first one. Yeah.
Yeah. It was the first one. And you were like, there weren't a lot of apps to use. It was just,
the very first one
was internet access on your television. Yeah. That's all it really was. It was, hey, watch this. You can get on the internet and I think you could do, that's what a lot of people would do is they'd go on and be like, you'd use the, what do you call it? What we're on right now. You'd use your, like an internet connection and put YouTube on your television. Right. And then that was like, oh, watch this instead of getting it on your whatever phone. I'm not even sure. Did this come out before the iPhone? I'm trying to, the iPhone's only been since 08. I think it was. What was that? 08 or 07? I think the iPhone.
Oh, yeah. 07 was iPhone. Yeah.
So this could have been.
I remember when 2017, it was like the 10 year or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. The X was the iPhone 10. But,
all right. So that was, May of 2008.
For Roku.
That was the first time the player was released.
So it came out literally the same time iPhone did.
Right. Because so, iPhone was like, I think, late 2007, I think. So it was, you know. It was, but it just had Netflix on it. That was it. And then I remember they added, because I was a part of Amazon had me in a beta program to where I could install the app. And then they would give me so many credits to watch certain things every month. And then I would report back on saying, oh, this is the, you know, how it streamed okay, or there's an issue with sound or whatever. So that was easy to get into those beta programs back then. Now it's like almost impossible because everybody on the internet wants, you know, if they put something out saying, hey, we want people to test this, you get a billion people, and it's like, you know, almost impossible now to, yeah. to do that. I kind of enjoy it sometimes because then you kind of get a little slice of the
future,
future, yeah. And kind of help, you know, give your opinion on things. Now, Amazon did send me recently something. They had me join some program for, ooh. I guess, some stuff. And it's been a couple months, but I, you know, they're like, haven't really, they just sent me a thing. Hey, do you want to join? I said, yes. And then they sent me, I guess a week or two later, sent me a survey thing. And I guess they want to know my habits or something. And then that was it. But I guess supposedly they're, I think sometimes they mail you the equipment to test.
Oh yeah.
Or
yeah.
You know, if it's software or whatever. So I don't know. I haven't, it's probably one of those things that we can't talk about if once it,
right,
doing something or whatever, but I haven't got anything yet. I've been excited to be like, hey, I want to try something out.
Yeah, so. Yeah, exactly. It's like, I remember the closest I came to doing anything like that was, and I was interested, was with Dish. I had Dish television from the 90s, back in my, when I was living in my apartment, and I was doing it. I did it in my apartment because the town I was in, the cable service they had didn't have ESPN2. They only carried ESPN, and the NHL at the time was on ESPN2. Okay. So I was like, everybody in my town were all, well, all my buddies and I were all big hockey fans, and we were like dying to get ESPN2 so we could watch all this hockey, because that was like big back then. There was no NHL network. There was no internet. There's no, you know, or to be able to watch stuff anyways.
Yeah.
So it was like, hey, you know, if you're a hockey fan, you wanted ESPN2. So I looked into it on Dish, and they carried it, of course. And I installed it, and I had it, you know, that was probably 94, 95, something like that.
Is that when it first kind of came out, or?
Dish Network?
Yeah. Was that fairly new then when you got it?
Not really. I think that was, it was fairly new where Dish had, they had downsized the actual Dish to that little one. Cause before mine, yeah. It was like the generations before that, I think you had to have the big one. Remember people had,
right. Yeah. You had the thing took up your backyard.
Yeah. So this was more user friendly. You could buy it right in, like, you know, we didn't have, what did we have? Circuit Cities. I think it was, you could buy back then, I think even Radio Shack sold them. You bought the kit and took it home, and then you could install it yourself, and you had a, you know, you run a coax cable out from your, wherever you install it, and run it to your television, and you had to point the Dish and aim it and, you know, lock it down. And I did all of that. And, I was just talking with my wife about it the other day, and the little test tones that you would hear as it locked in, it was like, boo.
You crank the TV up,
and it was like, and she was in the living room, and I'm out on the roof, and like, we were laughing because nowadays you just put an earpiece in and you could talk to each other, right?
Yeah.
Back then, sure. The cell phones were bolted to your car. Mm-hmm. They weren't handheld cell phones. It was like the only way you could, unless you were really expensive and it was a brick.
Yeah. So
you're not going out onto the roof with this something that looks like it's from the Vietnam War, and you're calling in an air raid. So you're like, what the, you know, so I'm out there and she's like, you're on. And I tighten it and she goes, it's off. It'd be like, beep.
It's really, well, I had a DirecTV, you know, so.
Yeah, same idea.
It was kind of same, but it was very, if you didn't, you know, do it just right. Just a tiny bit would, you know, throw it off or whatever.
And you got to get a good line of sight. And you're trying to look, you know, if you happen to be looking through some trees, you're like, oh boy, it was a pain. But anyways, my point is, like, I'd had it really early on and then switched away from it because different channels came better on cable in the town and blah, blah, blah. So I was going back and forth, but always up on the tech. And then by the time I was out here in the, you know, 2000s, 2010, 2012, and they start getting into the Joeys and the Hoppers and all this. The techs were coming to the house, and I knew more than they did. So the techs were calling. I actually had techs calling me on how they could install it wherever they were. And then the techs were like, do you want to test this out? Different tech. And I was like, sure. So they started getting me in on stuff, but they never, I mean, it just never materialized, but I kept getting requests, like, how would you like to test this out? Because you're helping us out here. And I'm like, I'd love to. Just send it to me. But it just never materialized.
Oh, I never did. Oh, okay, that would have been cool, because you probably would have got all the, when the DVRs came out and stuff, because...
Yeah, the early DVR, like, that was one of the things they were talking about, because they had DVR, they've had, I've had a DVR in my house since the 90s. They you had the DVR service, but, like, but it was, but then it evolved to what we know now, where you can watch anything on any TV, right? But originally, it was like, you had a DVR, but you could only watch the DVR on that television.
Yeah, yep.
And, but then I found a workaround around that. And then one of the like, again, when I went to the next upgrade, the guy's like, what the hell is going on here? Because I, there was an output on the back of the DVR. So I outputted it to my other television in the other room.
Could you control it, though, from the other room?
Of course you can.
Did it have the RF remote to where it worked through the...
No, but I installed the extenders.
Oh, you had the... Okay.
Yeah, I had extenders in my living room, which is the next floor up from my home theater rack. But in my home theater rack, I had the, like, you could use the remote in the living room to control the DVR that was in the basement. This is 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was just like, you'd have that extender and, just, yeah, we, it's it, the cables that I had running through this house, the things that I had going, it's like, and how simple everything is now compared to what it used to be is pretty funny.
It was a lot harder. There's so many options now. Sometimes too many options, right?
Oh yeah.
You can't figure out, well, do I want this or this, you know, or whatever.
That's why everybody gets that. Like I said the other day, I'm like, people, you get FOMO because there's so many variables. There's so many options and you're like, which is the right one? And, I think that's how we wrapped up the show that last week, was like basically saying, like, don't buy stuff because you see other people buying stuff. Buy it because either you're trying to solve a problem that you visually see or hear, or it's something like with us, with the Kaleidoscape. I didn't buy it because anybody else had it. I bought it because I always wanted it.
Yeah.
Me, same here. Personally. Right. And it wasn't like, but I understand you see what other people have, but I used the Illumigen last week as the example. Like, I didn't buy that because I thought it was cool to have a video processor. I bought it to solve the problem. I tried not to buy one, but I couldn't solve the problem that I wanted to solve. And then I found the ability to solve that problem. And that's what I did, right? It wasn't like, what next piece of thing can I buy now? It was, I want to get better HDR across everything. That does it. You know,
well, hopefully that will become cheaper as we go on, because that's something I looked at, but I'm just like, I want to spend more money than my projector costs on something.
Yeah.
You know, I get it, right? You could swap your projector out or whatever later, but I'm just like, I can't. And there's the Mad VR too, right? That one's really expensive.
That's,
I mean, you could build your own PC, but still you gotta, that could cost you too, right?
Right.
So, and then not to mention, I would never be able to set it up, right? It's not user friendly, is it? You had to have somebody set it. Would you have been able to do it yourself, you think? Or is it you could do it, but not as good? Or
I could now, but I've had mine for almost 2 years, right? So I kind of know the ins and the outs of it a little bit more, but they are difficult, and it's better to have somebody set it up for you.
Yeah.
We're actually going to be talking about a lot of that coming up soon on the podcast. But it's one of those things, like, if you don't see the need for it, you probably, much like I said with the Kaleidoscape, you can't justify it. But if you don't see the need for it, don't get one. But like in my case, I saw the need, solved it, and was blown away at how good it did solve the problem.
DJ, I'm an audioholic. I'll find some reason I need it, right?
Yeah.
I'll convince myself, well, I got to have this, right? I mean, I'll sit there and think about it. I'm like, I don't really need to do this, but I'm like, It's like, and then like my, you know how you have a midlife crisis? My midlife crisis is my home theater stuff, you know, just buying this, that got with the Kaleidoscape, and I'm not buying a sports car. that would be nice though, right. too. But yeah, I'm exactly. doing the home theater stuff, you know? So
it, what's funny is, Carl, listener Carl, who's been on the show a few times, likes to challenge me all the time. Right. And, but I appreciate it because it's proven out, right? So early on in the podcast, he was one of my very early supporters, very early Patreon supporters, but he always challenged me. And he always, in like our first interactions was like, I'd come on and I'd say something on my podcast and he'd go, can you document that? I'm like, no, I'm just going off my experience. I've been doing this for almost 30 years. At the time, it was probably over just over 30 years, right? So I'm like, I've been doing this like 30 years. I'm like, I wrote back to him and we went back and forth. I'm like, Carl, it's not up to me to doc. That's not what this podcast is about. I'm about the experiences and the sights, the sounds, the scenes, but first and foremost, the experiences. And that's where I've gotten my knowledge, right? If you want documentation, go to AV Rant. They're fantastic. Rob is fantastic at that. And Rob and I have gone back and forth about this. I'm like, well, I learned through experience. That's the way my mind works. So we went back and forth. I'm like, look it up for yourself. If you want to, if you don't believe me, which I'm not telling anybody to believe me, right? It's like, that's up to you. And what I said to Carl in one of our early exchanges, I go, if I'm right, if I'm wrong, that'll play out. You won't trust me. You'll stop listening, right? If it plays out, if what I'm saying actually has some validity and you find that out elsewhere, that's how you learn to trust me. That's how I've gotten my knowledge. I've learned from people that, okay, I'll listen to what they say and I'll see how it plays out elsewhere and be like, hey, that guy's right. That's why I trust Jim so much. It's never failed. He has never failed me. So I'm not saying I don't make mistakes, but I learn from these things and I go on. Well, let's jump forward. Literally 3 years since I've been talking to Carl. He'd never heard of a Kaleidoscape before. Never heard of Lumagen or video processors. He now owns a Kaleidoscape after questioning everything about it, has a Mad VR and raves about them, right? But at every time I bought one of these pieces of equipment, he'd tell me, you don't need that. And here's why. And I know I don't, but I like it. And this is what it does for me. And blah, 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 blah. And to his credit, his integrity is, yeah, he's going to make a statement. But then he'll look into it and be like, all right, well, maybe he's right. And now look at him. He loves his Kaleidoscape, loves his Mad VR, his video processor. And it's like, and I'm not taking credit for that. I'm actually giving him the credit for pushing me and challenging me and then being man enough to go, damn it, he was right. Right? It's like, yeah. Question. And that is one of the first things he said to me. He's like, he goes, you know, question but verify, or trust but verify. That's what it was. Trust but verify. And he was asking me to verify it. I go, no, that's on you. Trust. If you want to trust me, you're going to verify. And as you learn, and you do that with anybody in your life, right? It's like you verify as you get to know them. Then years down the road, you stop verifying because everything has worked out for you. So what now you, that's what true trust is, right? And that's all I was asking him to do. And that's all I ask anybody, you know, it's like, I'm not asking you to believe me. It's like, check for yourself. But over time, you'll be like, I'm not even going to bother looking that one up. He's probably right. He was right the last 10 times, whatever. Or I'm wrong all the time. And then you just flat out stop listening to me, which is fine, you know, but so.
Yeah, but you're not, that's not what you're about though. You know, you're more about just all us people like you, right? That have been in home theater and just want to talk to other people about it. That's what you're about.
That, I mean, yeah, the experiences, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and the shared experiences, right? We all been there, what we've experienced, you know, we've all, well, and maybe to give because we need some younger people to come and experience this home theater stuff, right?
Well, like my son-in-law. He's brand new at this. So much fun watching him.
I was so happy when I heard him. I was like, that's good to get somebody in. Because, you know, nowadays it seems like they're content of watching on their phone or whatever, you know. And you were talking, I don't know if it was this week's Takeover Tuesday or the one from last week, but about going to the movies or whatever. Yeah. I've always loved to go to the movies, you know, ever since I was a kid. And that's what I think all of us probably were like that, right? That's what we wanted to get that experience at home, right? But even if having that at home, I still really enjoy the experience of going. Now it's more, like you said, I think it's more of I'm going to go to see something that's going to be worth it. Because it's so expensive now, really, to go, you know, to the movies. It's, you know, you're talking, if you want to get snacks and stuff, you're talking 50, well, probably around here, I don't know where you're at, but we're talking maybe $60 or so to go for a couple with and to get some snacks or whatever. So I want to make it right. I want to go see something that's going to be entertaining, and I'm going to go to a theater that's I know is going to be good, right? I'm going to go to, like, I mean, Dolby Cinema's pretty much spoiled me.
Yeah.
I can't go to see anything. I'd probably go to IMAX, you know, if it was shown in IMAX and not the Dolby. I mean, Dolby's not even right close to me. It's about, I got to drive about 40 minutes, you know, to get to the, I mean, it's close enough to drive. That's not too far.
Mine's like hour 10, 15.
The closest I'd still do that. See, and I've always been like that. Like, if I could experience a movie at a good theater, or back in the day, you know, it's like a 70 millimeter print, you know, at a really nice, I would make the trip. I used to do it when I was younger. I've been thinking about it as I get older to travel to different cities and go to experience the theaters at the other cities. Cause you know, all these certain places have some really nice theaters, you know, well, obviously California. But there, you know, I mean, there's some good theaters throughout the country. And to experience that, I'd love to do that, you know, just kind of travel. I don't know if my wife, I've never asked her that, but I would like to just, hey, let's just go travel, just go see movies, you know. It'd probably have to be something interesting enough for her. But for me, it sounds like, hey, that'd be great. I would love that, right? But I don't know, other people would probably be like, well, that's kind of weird. You know, that doesn't sound exciting or whatever. But
That was a, it still is. It's on my wife and I's like bucket list of, you know, traveling around the country. My grandparents did it. They packed up the car and literally, my grandmother was from Canada. So they traveled all across the United States and Canada, like a big loop all the way around, you know, we're in New England. They left here, went up through Canada, back, and kind of like over the border, under the border, over the border, under the border. And I'm saying like ribboned the border all the way across, trying to hit as many states and Canada. Then they went down the West Coast through California and everything, then went across the South into Florida and then back up. So all the way around trying to hit as many states as they could. Wow. And they took like over a month to do it. They were gone. And just hitting, you know, in the car, my grandfather had the old, you know, Crown Victoria, loved his Crown Victoria. And that's what he traveled around the country in. And just staying, you just go to the next motel, stay over, and then drive more the next day. So my wife and I want to kind of, you know, mirror that a little bit. And but I want to do it in, like, I've always wanted to do it in a Winnebago, like a big, you know, stay in that. And, and I always said to her, I go, I don't want a trailer one. I want where you can get up out of your chair, out of your captain's chair, and go back. And this is the running joke. I go, and while I'm driving it, you can go back, make me a sandwich, and then come in the kitchen that's right there. You know what I mean? And that's the vision I have in my head. It's like that accessible, right? And
you're going to have a little home theater in there too, DJ?
Well, that's the thing is now I do want that. And that was why I had Dish. I mean, one of the things Dish was capable of at the time is you could travel with one. They had a travel capable one that you can put on the top and you dial in, and people use it for tailgating. People use it. So I did have that in mind. But we were going to travel around and go to different, you know, just probably stay within the country, but hit different states, see different things, go to different movie theaters. And now it has evolved into, hopefully someday I'm still doing this and going around and seeing people and just doing that. And, you know, and going and around and experiencing home theaters someday. Mm-hmm. Now this is way down the road, But it's, you know, that it's something we want to do with our retirement, you know, and, you know, that's 10, 15 years away probably, but that would be fun.
And, yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I'm sure people would be more than happy to, you know, invite you in to check out their theaters or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Do a, you know, home theater tour road trip, you know? So that would be a lot of fun to do. Mm-hmm. And it's a dream that I've had since my grandfather did it when I was a kid, and now it has evolved into my other hobby. Right. So it's like, oh, what the hell? This is great. So we'll see. But yeah, but it's funny how, like you said, getting back into the regular theaters, that not only are the consumers not wanting to necessarily go to the theaters, like you said, unless it's a big blockbuster that you want to see, but even because of streaming, they're only sending the big blockbusters to the theater.
Oh, right. Yeah. You talked about that last time too. Yeah.
You know,
I can see that too. You know, they're trying to make money. I get it. Right. And if no one's going, they want to go see something special or whatever. It's like, you know, I hadn't seen a movie in a while because everything that comes out, I was just like, nah, I don't care to see that, you know? So the last thing I saw was just last weekend. I saw the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Yeah.
I thought, well, I want to see that. I always liked the first two, and I want to see how it kind of ends. And I went to the Dolby Cinema to see it, and it was great, you know. And I think the next thing I'll probably go see is the Mission Impossible, which is I'm very excited for that. So those are always really good. I can't think of. Maybe only the second Mission Impossible was
not The Flash. I can't wait for the Flash movie.
Oh, the Flash.
That comes out in a few weeks.
I think I was reading about that somewhere. I'll have to look at that. See, maybe is that the first? I'm not follow the Marvel stuff too much, but
that's DC.
That's DC. Okay.
And that's from the, it's the same. It's basically I don't want to give it away if you don't know, but it's supposed to be really good. It's from a comic. It's that like a multiverse type thing. It's going to be
just the first movie for this character or superhero.
His first standalone. Yeah. But okay. It's the Flash that was in the Justice League and all that. Yeah. Same guy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Now I saw the Justice League. Okay. I remember.
So, you know, that the Flash that was with Ben Affleck.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. So it's him. And Ben Affleck is in this one in The Flash. So that's coming out without looking it up. I think it's in a couple of weeks. It's in June. Comes out in June. So that's the one I've been looking forward to all year.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. It has the potential to be, I mean, it's going to be regardless of how it does. And I said this at the beginning of the year as my most anticipated movie of the year. I'm like, it has the potential. It is the most interesting movie because it could either be really bad, really good, or somewhere in the middle. But regardless of where it lands quality wise, it's going to be super talked about because this is the latest DC. And there's been a lot of stuff going on with this movie for years. And
yeah,
it's been delayed.
Yeah. So I kind of heard about that now that you say that. So it's on track to come out then now, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. A few weeks. So people are talking about it online, having seen it. Stephen King being the latest one I saw just today or yesterday. And people are seeing it. Critics are seeing it. And they're saying it's amazing.
Oh, okay.
But obviously I take that with a grain of salt because anybody seeing it this early is usually chosen to see it this early so that they can say good things about it. So we'll see what happens, but, you know, trust, but verify.
Yeah. Well, if you want to go see it, that's what I say. Go support your theater and go see it. If it's something you want to see, why not? Right. I hope it's not disappointing, but, you know, I haven't had, you know, too many problems with, other people in the theater, you know, like, one, guy you had on said he was having some incidents with I'm sure it happens, but I've luckily enough, knock on wood, I've not had too many problems with anybody interrupting or causing distractions or whatever. I think maybe If you do like the Dolby Cinema, which costs more to go into, maybe you get people that are more, you know, want to see it in a good presentation or whatever.
Yes, absolutely. So
that might have to do with it, maybe. But yeah, it would definitely cause a problem if somebody was,
Yeah, that's a great point. Most of my issues have been during matinee hours when I'm allowed to be there, like because of my work, it's raining. I can't go anywhere. I can't do anything else. So I'm like, all right, I'll just go and check this movie out that I haven't seen. And like I said, a couple weeks ago, the worst one was the kid running around with the lighted shoes.
Oh, right.
That was at a premiere. Well, premiere to us. It was the first showing. But the first showing was at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when they used to be midnight and you never had issues there. There were no, there were distractions, but it was like part of the party. It was the event to be at. Yeah,
there was usually if it's a popular movie, you would have a ton of people, especially probably dressed up or whatever.
Oh yeah.
All excited and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
The atmosphere, it was probably great vibe, right? To have everybody else there, you know, it's exciting.
Oh yeah. I mean, the Star Wars prequels were like that. Lord of the Rings prequels were like that. People showing up to especially the second one. The first one, people showed up. There were a few people that had read the books that showed up in some like Gandalf get-ups or something like that. But then the second one, people went crazy. People were dressed like Legolas. People were dressed like they were dressed like Gandalf. They were hobbits. The little kids were dressed like, but it was midnight showing. But this was at midnight and you weren't allowed to see. And even then it was like, can you see this? Can you be the first one to see it? And the 12 o'clock would sell out like that. Then they had a 12:01 and then a 12:02. And a 12:03, but only 12 o'clock. One room was dedicated to 12 o'clock. And they probably had, like for Lord of the Rings, I want to say by the time they got to Return of the King, they probably had, I don't know, 6 to 10 screens going. And only one would be the best screen. And that would be 12 o'clock. And then hopefully you could get, you know what I mean? So it was like you were trying to buy tickets on time. It wasn't really online stuff. You had to go there and get your ticket. Mm-hmm. So there was a line like weeks before just to get your ticket. It was general admission. So once you had your ticket, now you got to get there. We were getting there at like 7 o'clock at night, getting in line for a 12 o'clock show.
I remember sitting
on the floor watching, partying.
That's what's so much better nowadays. The reserve seating.
Though?
Oh, I love it. I love it.
It is nice, but you miss out on those big events.
Yeah, but I want to know exactly where I'm sitting. And then the other thing is you can pretty much, you could just walk in whenever, I guess, right? And well, hopefully your seat, someone's not sitting in them, I guess. But, and the stadium seating is another thing that's the game changer compared to what it used to be.
When we were kids, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Be able to get stuck behind somebody taller or something, and you couldn't just see a big head and this part of your viewing experience, you know. So the stadium seating and then the reserve seating. Yeah. I know some people don't like the reserve seating, but I really do. I like to know where I'm going to sit because, you know, I remember, like you're talking about, being in you getting there and waiting in line, right, to go into a showing. And I remember a friend and I, when I was in high school, we went to see, I think it was 2010, Space or whatever the second one was called.
Yeah.
So we got in line, we're waiting, get in there. It was on a Friday. I think the first Friday it was released and we got stuck in the very front.
Oh,
yeah. You know, and I was like, I could see, it was just fuzzy looking and I'm like, this isn't really enjoyable at all. So ever since then, I've always been, you know, if I ever got to that situation where the seats were bad again, I would just walk out, you know, just say, I want to come back for a different showing or something because I didn't want to, not to mention, I recall plenty of times we would go in there and there would be no seats together, right? For my friend and I, and we'd have to ask, hey, can you scoot over or whatever kind of thing, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So at least you can reserve seats together or whatever now, which is kind of nice.
But here's the funny thing, though. It's like, doesn't it kind of like, so you have reserve seating, you can buy your tickets on an app or online long before the movie, like a month before the movie. Now, I think it turns it more into a chore instead of an event. And it's like, you look on your calendar and go, like, I know that it, for me, it's like all of a sudden I'm like, oh yeah, such and such is coming up this Thursday. I bought tickets a month ago. All right, I got to get out of work, or I got to get, all right, I'll schedule to go there and I'll get there. And it's like, if you're running behind and you're like, all right, well, that's no big deal. I got you have your seats. So, you know, you can just walk in and now you're like, wow, damn, I've seen so many trailers. I'll just wait. I'll get there for this time so that I can walk in, sit down, and the movie starts playing. But it takes that special event feel out of it. Now you're just there to see the movie and get out so you can say you saw the movie. Right. And it's like, it's not as much as that whole fun part of hanging out with everybody and being there for ahead of time. As much as a pain in the ass as that was, it's still, that was part of that excitement. Like, I can't wait to go to that midnight showing and hang out with people for 5 hours so I can get the better seat.
Yeah. I mean, I can see what you're saying. When I was younger, I probably didn't mind as much. Being older, I'd be like, I don't want to stand around for a couple hours. I probably would if it was something I really wanted to see, right? You know, and it was at a nice theater or whatever. I probably would do it now. But it's definitely nice to have I see what you're saying, though. And I do miss saying, because you don't see this a lot of theaters either, is comedies, right? That was the greatest, going to a comedy. And it's because laughter's contagious, right? And it's just so fun to see a movie that everybody is like, seems like the movie's funnier, actually, you know, because seeing it by yourself sometimes is kind of like, that's funny, but if you got other people around you enjoying and laughing with you, you know, that makes a huge difference.
It does, you know, it does. And then how about the part where you went out afterwards with whoever you were with?
Oh,
and you just totally messed the jokes up. Like, I remember that part. I was dying laughing. And he said, I don't remember exactly what it was, but he like made this face and it was like, and then your mother did this. And you're like, and you're all laughing, but you're totally butchering the entire scene, but you're reenacting it, telling, especially me. And you're like, that's what you did. And you'd be at a restaurant next door at 9 o'clock at night after the 7 o'clock showing, and you're just hanging out. And all that fun is like, all right, now I go to the movie, go home so I can tweet about it.
Well, and you know, like, I know you don't like horror movies, but horror, that's another good one to go see with other people.
I do like them, just not, that's what's so funny. Now that I have this show and I have Steve and I have John, and it's like, oh, DJ doesn't like horror movies. No, I love horror movies. Well, I just like certain ones. I just don't like them and love them as much as they do. I don't think anybody loves them as much as Steve does. Right.
Yeah.
But it's like, that's the thing. It's so funny.
But yeah, that's another one good to see with a crowd, you know. But the comedies, I mean, I remember seeing some and people would be laughing so long because you'd miss like following lines because everybody was still laughing so hard, you know, on the whatever.
Yeah. You're right. You'd be like, and now you'd just be like, all right, I'll just rewind it when I watch it later.
I don't think, I can't think of any comedies that have come. I mean, they've been on, you know, streaming, but
they're all going to streaming.
Yeah.
I was going to say, to counter that, it's like I said, I'm listening to Smartless and hearing from the actors and the directors and the writers and stuff. And even more now I'm listening because of Smartless. I'm also listening to Dana Carvey and what's his name? I love their podcast too. But anyways, they talk to all the actors and art friends, comedians. Okay. Yeah. And they basically, that's all they do is they talk to these people, and one after the other, it's a complete shift change in Hollywood where everybody's appreciating what streaming is doing now. And they're like, more features are getting made that wouldn't have been made 10 years ago. Because we're not giving this the budget to go to, you know, it's going to, the money it would have to generate in the theater, it'll never do it. So we're not going to do it. And now they're like, oh, perfect. That one can go to streaming. Here's your budget. Go do it. And they're like, wow, they're getting things made that never would have been made before.
Oh, and not to mention the quality.
David Spade. Get, there you go.
Oh, sorry. David Spade, right.
Yes.
The quality you're getting with the shows now, right? I mean, the production quality is top notch. I mean, if you go back and look at the TV shows from the 70s and the 80s or whatever, there is not, the production is, and even the shows probably, I enjoy all those shows, don't get me wrong, but the production quality of stuff nowadays is so much better. I mean, you know, even the, like when they had those mini series back in the day, they were okay. I mean, they were good for what they were, but nowadays it seems like the production quality is so good. It could be actually, you know, it could have been released at the theater or whatever, you know?
Right.
So it's, and not to mention they can have a series, right?
Yeah.
So they can, have a, you know, 8-part.
Right. They can series, expand right? on a, yeah. Like, oh, this is too long to make in the theaters. Well, okay, we'll make a series out of it. There you go. Bang. And the production quality is that good. And it's cheaper to make good quality content now because of digital, because they don't, you know, you're not paying and wasting film that's digital. They're like, just run it and we'll get the best we can, you know, we'll do what we can. I mean, it's not even a joke. iPhone or Apple uses it in their commercials. You could make a movie nowadays with your iPhone and their software that would rival something from 20 years ago. Right. So it's like, so imagine like with a decent budget, you don't have to be spending crazy money to put it out onto a streaming service that, you know, you, so now we can spend the money on some more effects that we want to do or talent. We could pay the talent. There's a lot more stuff that's able to be done because, you know, technology has gotten cheaper. And we're literally getting, I mean, we as home theater fans are seeing that we're getting past the point of, I mean, we're past the point of diminishing returns. There's like to go to 8K, there's no viable reason to do it. No, right.
I don't think so.
If we're past the optical improvements, so what's left to do? Everything just gets cheaper. So now to wow us visually, there's really, you know, they can spend the money elsewhere. You see what I mean? It's like, so it's enabling projects to be done that wouldn't have been able to be done because they had to spend so much money to get it done. But now it's all right, go ahead, do it.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, you know, regular television 480p or whatever, if it was even that high, broadcast probably 360 or something like that.
It definitely, it was interlaced. Yeah. It was like 360 or 480i or yeah.
So that was around for a long, long time before, you know, HD basically replaced it. Right.
Yeah. In the early 2000s. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they had, you know, black and white originally, and then the color kind of came out. I don't remember when it was, late '60s, early '70s or whatever it was.
Right.
But that point, it had been around for a long time. Right. And that, been any big other than color, there was not big, you know, you can get your Sony Trinitron, you know, TV, which was probably the best TV to get, but that was it. You know, you get the Laserdisc, could probably be the best format to show, you know,
that was the 480p.
Right. So once HD came out, which was mind-blowing, right? I mean, do you remember going from standard def to high def?
I mean,
it was just like, wow. Yeah. There was no like, well, maybe it's a little, I can notice a little bit. No, it was like, wow, this is completely. But now when you go from HD to 4K,
it's not as big of a jump.
I mean, the color, I could, you know, HDR, it looks, don't get me wrong, HDR looks great, but it's still not like night and day.
It's
like,
not,
like the 480p. Yeah. To HD 1080p, it was just like, wow.
Right.
You know, so there's been nothing like, it's kind of been a little progression since then. And yeah, you're right. Going to 8K, I think it's hard for most people probably to even tell 4K, right? Depending on how far you, most people are probably,
well, you can't,
far enough,
you
can't, right?
And that's the thing. It's on a, for anybody that didn't experience it firsthand, so, you need to have, and I've said it before, you need to have like 75 and up to see a difference, to be able to perceive the difference between HD to 4K, just to be able to perceive it on a test pattern. So here's your pixels. These are the differences, and you'd see them. Anything under that, and it's too imperceivable. There, it's right. too small, right?
Yeah.
And that's doubling. Okay. The reason they go, so when you go from 1080 to 4K, you're actually going from, what is it, 2180 to 4K.
Right.
Right. Because up until 4K, we always counted the horizontal, right? And that was, so 1080 is based off of the amount of pixels going from, say, your top right to your bottom right.
Yeah,
sure. You went vertically down the side. So you had 1,080 lines of resolution that went down, and that's it. And the difference between P and I is the odds went one, and then they'd scan through the evens and then the odds, and your eye couldn't tell the difference. But when you go to P, it would go line one, line two, all the way down, right? And that was smoother perception to our eye. We went from 480 to 1080. 480 was, like you said, on Laserdisc. That's like almost three times better, right? It's more than two times better. Everything, every jump since then has not only been almost imperceivable, it's also only double the resolution. Where they're trying to tell you, like, you're going, it's four times better. It's really not. It's only two times better, because all they're doing is to go from 4K, from 1080 to 4K, all they're doing is taking that one pixel and they're cutting it in their, mm-hmm. I mean, you're turning it into four pixels. Mm-hmm. So that's how they can get away with saying it's four times better, because you're getting four pixels instead of one. But the thing is you have to double it, because that pixel is, you can't just cut it in half one way, right? Because then you wouldn't have a square, you wouldn't have a pixel, you'd have a rectangle, mm-hmm. right? So it's, when they're doing this, it's like everything we're doing now is just, you're dividing those pixels finer and finer, which is less perceivable. But the first jump we did from standard def to HD was even bigger than that. You know what I mean? Almost three times bigger.
Oh, I could sit and watch the, the river running down the, on TV, just go, oh my gosh, get a picture, right? And it was just, and then like when they started doing like a sitcom or something in HD, you're like, oh my gosh, look at, and they would do the commercials. Remember, it would still be standard def, so they kind of switch back and forth.
Yeah, yeah.
And you would be like, wow.
Or actually, it went in the reverse a lot of times. The commercials were ahead of the programming, because a lot of the programming, even into like 2010, some of these shows weren't shot in HD yet.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But the commercials were trying to wow you. So that was where you got some of your best content. You were like, oh my God, look at that apple. Right? Look at the grapes in that fruit basket. You're like, holy crap. And it was amazing. And you're like, and as a HD guy, you're in your theater going, oh, here come the commercials. What do we got? Oh, that tide looks beautiful. You know, look at the vibrancy in that orange on the tide box or something stupid like that. And you got some of the better surround sound too in the early commercials, because they're trying to wake you up in the middle of the night or something, but it sounded fantastic. And then you go back to your regular, sitcom, and you'd be like, a mono sound in standard def stretched on your screen. It was, oh my God.
But yeah, like the HDR is nice. Thing is, HDR can be applied to 1080p, right?
Yeah.
So they won't do that. Now you can, I'm pretty sure Netflix and maybe Disney, I'm trying to think. There's some of them will broadcast 1080p with HDR, and I know Netflix does, I think, and I'm pretty sure a couple others do, but see, it can be done. So they theoretically could have come out with a Blu-ray player that just is 1080p that HDR, right? And I bet you could, if you got a 1080p HDR and you didn't, someone just put it to play and you didn't know, you'd probably be like, oh yeah, it's 4K, right? Because the colors are better or whatever.
The color, more detail in the shadows, in the colors, and you get a better contrast going. I think on, you know, the larger displays, like I said, like 75 and up, you would notice a drop off, especially like at, I have 110. Anybody with a projector that large, you're going to note the 4K does pay off.
Oh, yeah, yeah. On a bigger, you know,
but
bigger
on a, screen. But, sure. The, but the masses, they could save so much bandwidth by going to a 1080 HDR. Ara's talked about it on HD Guys. He said it a lot. So there's ways that they could get away with stuff like that to make it, you know, more to save on bandwidth. But one of the, and Ara and I have talked about this, after I hear him on HD Guys, I'll call him sometimes and be like, what about this point? I'm that annoying listener to him because now I have his number.
Well, he still takes your call. So I guess that's a
good exactly. Call, right? Exactly. But I can almost see like I'm making him roll his eyes now. How about that? No, but I do say like what I'll say, like he'll on that point there, I think I talked to him about, I still think they're trying to push the envelope. I think they could dial it back and get better, you know, unclog the pipelines a little bit by going to 1080. But I think they're trying to push the envelope instead of standing pat and going, all right, we could do it this way. I think they really do want to get, I mean, to the point where it's indeceivable between streaming and physical. And all that means is like, I mean, think of where we were just 5 years ago and 10 years ago with streaming. You weren't able to even do 4K. And right. now we can 4K with HDR and Atmos. So 5 to 10 years from now, they'll probably be able to match physical.
Yeah. You know? I would think that would, you know, cause the compression gets so much better. Right.
Right.
Now they have, I don't remember. There's a newer one that's kind of coming out that can compress even better. You know, well, use less data or whatever, and
or just being able to use the same data and be able to pack it and unpack it on each mm-hmm. end, right?
Yeah.
So how quickly can we decipher that? The processors can solve a lot of that problem because that's where we're at now. It's not like the pipelines are that much better. We're still sending it over the same networks. It's the ability to pack it and unpack it on each end is getting so much faster
yeah.
that we're able to do 4K and HDR. So 5 years from now, if you can pack and unpack that even faster, it's still the same network. It's still the same stream.
Think about that, DJ. 10 years ago, if someone told you you'd be streaming 4K HDR with Dolby Atmos, you'd be like, whoa, that'd be awesome.
It would be like, what's 4K? We didn't even have it.
Well, right? Yeah. Well, you would know. You'd be like, wow, 4K. Okay. That's got to be.
Yeah.
You know,
we knew it was coming.
Right. But I mean, even when I first got that first Roku player, right? And streaming Netflix in SD.
Right.
I never, you know, the next thing I was thinking was, you know, 5.1. I don't even think 5.1. I think they went to HD before they started even doing, you know, Dolby Digital or whatever on there. It was HD, you know, 720p, I think is when it first started streaming. Right. And it was very few titles, right?
Yeah.
So now it's like, it's just so much. I mean, it's just the next 10 years, can you imagine? I'm sure there's stuff we can't even think about right now, right? That's going to be
right
coming out. And you're like, wow, you know, I mean, look at this AI, right? Who knows what's going to happen with this AI? And just in 5 years, I think that AI stuff's going to explode. And
do you?
Well, when I mean that explode, I mean,
what do you think it's going to do?
There's going to be good stuff and bad stuff that comes out of it. That's like any technology, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's a little scary. Some of it is, you know. I mean,
so that's a fun one for me. I have my thoughts. Like, what now? I think it's scary because we watch sci-fi movies, but can you why do you think it's scary? And then I'll tell you why I think it's not. And I'm probably wrong because I'm missing something, but go ahead. Why do you think it's scary?
Well, let me think. Like, once they can start doing stuff and learning things themselves, doing things on their own, you can't control what they do at certain points, I guess. Let me give you an example. I don't know if you heard about this, but I can't remember the finer details of this, but they were experimenting with this AI, and they had two computers with AI, and they were isolated. They weren't on the internet or anything. They were just testing, and they were, these two machines would talk to each other and do learn from each other and do stuff. Well, it got to a point where the two AIs created their own computer language and started talking to each other. So the engineers had no clue what they were talking about. They had to turn it off because they were like, we don't even know what they're talking to each other about, because they they just created their own language and started talking to each other, and no one knew what they were up to. So and then not to mention, like, you get you know, I'm sure
Now let's I've heard that example.
Okay.
Right. Now, why is that scary?
Well, I mean, because what can happen, right? They can do pretty much whatever. You're not going to have a clue what's going to happen.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, it's already played out. Like, what could they do?
They're going to evolve even more, right?
Why?
Because they'll just.
I'm trying to walk you to the part where it's already been solved. They unplugged them.
I was talking to a friend of mine the other day. We went to dinner, and he was talking about. We were kind of talking about this, and he was telling me that I can't remember the whole details on this, but something about how a doctor can, I guess, research or do kind of study something, and he said, or try to, I guess, diagnose something, and he said sometimes it would take months for now to do, where this AI can do it in like 10 seconds. Boom.
Right.
It can process the thing. And that's a good thing, right? But it also could be a bad thing too, right? You know, there's always going to be
But then how is that bad? Like, everybody says, like, okay, now what if it could do, it could go bad? In every scenario that I've heard where it goes bad, I'm like, just we programmed it. We're telling it to learn. If we don't, like, now go to the case of, like, where you said that started talking in its own language and we don't know what it's saying. Well, then how do we know what it's saying is bad or good? We don't know.
We don't.
Here's the thing. And what did we do about it? We shut it off.
Well,
they still need power.
No, once it gets out on the internet, there's no stopping it, right? You can't turn the internet off, can you?
Well, yeah. How? You don't have to listen to it.
No, I'm saying, but if it gets out there.
You're saying like if it all of a sudden decided to like send out a bug, but that could be done by a human too. You could infest every, you know, I mean, we've all seen
I'm not saying
scenarios
that. I'm saying,
where you just shut down the power grid and everything, right?
I'm just saying that, like, it could replicate itself enough to where you could not. I mean, that's what the internet was created for, right? It was created for I think the U.S. created it for nuclear war, right? Because, you know, communications is the key, right? So they created, like, the internet. So no matter, there was no way to, like, cut off communication. Internet would always, if this node went down, it would just go around and whatever. So, so this, the same thing. This AI could put itself out there, and you could shut down this server or wherever it's put itself, but it would still have this other, it would be replicated to where it could keep going and you couldn't stop it, right?
Yeah, so we're talking Skynet, we're talking, you know, what you call it, from Marvel, the what happened in Age of Ultron. That was Ultron, right? Did the same thing. It's like, oh, we killed him here, but he popped up in this computer over here.
Yeah.
And it's, why would, it, but that's the thing, it's like, I haven't heard why the computer would be motivated to do that.
Well, because it's learning, right? So, right. I mean, even now, have you, like, Microsoft sent me a thing, said, hey, we're got this chat GPT or whatever. Do you want to, before they made it public, they invited people. So I went and played around with it or whatever. But when they released it, and I think even to this day, it's still like, you can only do so many follow-ups asking questions and stuff. And it makes you reset and start back from the beginning. Because what they found was, I guess they had some other people testing originally. And they said after a while, you going back and forth, it would start acting really weird. Like saying, like some guy was talking to it. And at some point, I don't know how long the conversation went on, but he's, the computer's telling him to leave his wife, and you know, and, you know, I mean, because you know, if the AI thinks, well, the planet is dying, right? What's the best way to prevent the planet from dying? Well, humans are the ones that destroys the planet, right? So if we destroy humans, then it'll save the planet. The well, AI, that's what the AI would decide, right? I mean, it's just thinking, hey, we got to do whatever it takes to, you know, it. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure if there's a master fuel switch.
That's the sci-fi part of you. Yeah. That's the sci-fi part of it. It's like, okay, so I'm reading on the internet that this is what's going on, so it's going to serve. But it's like, I don't know. If we're smart enough to create it, I think we're smart enough to shut it down. That's all.
I think it's going to be smarter than us.
But it's only given the information we gave it at any point. Where would it get anything we haven't told
it? Yeah. Well, now it has the
You see what internet. I'm saying?
It has the internet to go out and do its own thing, right? To look and research and do its stuff.
Right. But there's, right. But it, so we are organic. As a species, our minds, it's like we are building off of each other. So like just rudimentary thinking, like Da Vinci thought of something nobody ever thought of before. Okay. Technically, so like then you or the next inventor comes along, like Einstein comes along or and he thinks of something or discovers something that's never been discovered before. And then we build off of that. Okay. So the computer, these AIs are giving us the ability to think, to put all of this information in a centrally located place and have it process it. But it can't so far. These AIs can only spit back what we have put into it. They don't create, they only replicate. So what are we doing? So anything it gives back to us is only what, they're a mirror of what we told them. Computers are just data that we put into it, right? It's not thinking for itself.
Well, what about those two AIs that talk to each other and created their own language?
How do you know it's saying anything correct? We don't know what it's saying. That's like saying these two rocks here, we found out, are actually communicating. Are they? How do we know? It could just be just going haywire and we think it's talking to each other. Because if you're going to tell me now I've heard this story, but I'm like, you're telling me you don't know what it's doing. So how do you know what it's doing? Well, how do you know it's talking?
But
that's not a problem. We don't know what it is.
You don't know what it's up to, right? AI. It could pretty much do whatever it wants. Learn and decide on things that, you know.
Right, but you don't know what it's doing. So if you don't know what it's doing, you can't say that it's good or bad. But what they did, shut it off. See what happens. It's like, oh, it developed its own language. Wait a minute, you just said, not you. I'm saying it developed its own language. How do you know it's its own language if you don't know what it's saying?
Well, I mean, they knew it was doing things between the machines or processing things between themselves or whatever. I don't know. You'd have to ask the engineers, but it was scary enough that they wanted to shut it down, right? Because they were worried about what was happening. So I don't know. I mean, you know, like I said, there'll be a lot of good stuff comes out of it, but you could. Now, I mean, you go tell it, hey, you write me a response to this email or whatever, right? And it's going to pop up and do something 10 times better than I would probably come up with.
Right. People are putting like legal documents together with it. They're like, I need this to sound like my lawyer wrote it. Ba-da-dum. It spits it out and be like, perfect. Yeah. That's not the way I would talk, but perfect. Right. You know, but I don't know. I don't think we're going to end up like Skynet. I don't think.
I'm not saying that. You know, I'm just saying it's, and what do
I'm
you
I'm more
know?
Afraid of humans than I am of, well, you know.
What do you think these other countries are doing that are developing this too, right? So what are they going to use it for?
But that's the thing is there are people are malicious. Computers aren't. Computers are a tool. People are malicious. So, and me being Brightside, and I've said this on with John as long as I've known, as long as we've talked on podcast, there's a very famous quote. Not very famous. I should rephrase that. One of my favorite quotes from a Superman comic. And somebody asked Superman, he's up hovering above the earth in the frame and he's looking down and he can hear everything. Right.
Yep.
And he's like, somebody asked, I think it was Jimmy Olsen actually said, like, what is it like being able to hear, all of the desperation, all of the negatives, all of the people crying out for help and not being able to get to them and help them? Because if you can hear everything, you're hearing everybody crying, right? And he's like, actually, it's very encouraging because of all, he hears everything, but he also can hear it, that's a small percentage. He goes, it's way more powerful to hear people saving themselves, other people saving those people. And he's like, we are far better. Humans are far better. We only see the negative, but we're far better people than we get credit for, because we tend to focus on the 5% that are super evil, and we're missing out on the 95% that is great. Most people are great people, sure, but we only just see the negative because that's what's great on the news. Like, oh, a car blew up. Yay.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I still think
that was the gist of that comic. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, it's going to be a lot of good too. Like, that's what I'm saying. There's going to be a lot of stuff. Like if you can get a doctor, diagnose something much quicker and more accurately, well, that's a good thing. Right.
Right.
You know, I mean, maybe at some point these things will be, you know, I mean, sci-fi stuff has kind of predicted this too. Maybe the AI will be the one doing operating, right? At some point.
Yeah.
You just lay in a machine. You know, they have those little, where doctors can do remote surgeries now.
Yeah, yeah.
And they have a machine on the other end and they just control. Well, who's say that the AI can't just control the machine and say, oh, I got to do this operation. Boop, boop, boop. And,
right.
You know,
it's like autopilot on a plane. It's like autopilot in cars, which we're not comfortable with yet.
Yeah.
20 years from now, we'll probably be pretty comfortable with it. Because what's funny is people are missing out. I remember I'll never trust a car to drive. And I'm like, you sound like my grandfather, or you sound like some, you know, like we're turning into those people, because it's like, why don't you think you're better? You think you're a better driver than the car? Well, what if it makes a mistake? People make mistakes all the time, but we're fine with that. But imagine a world where every car was synced. There would be no accidents. That, like, if my car is talking to the car in front of it, everybody knows what's going on. You're just sitting there reading a book, waiting to get to your next destination.
Oh, it would be.
It'd be so much safer.
It would be not only safer, but so much more
economical,
efficient.
It's, yeah,
I mean, think about it. There would be no traffic, right? Because it would know. Like, most traffic is caused by not only congestion, but there's some people that just slow down, right?
Right,
and then that just creates a whole ripple effect, right, of everybody. Because if you ever drive, you're stuck in traffic and you just get to a certain point and you're like,
what are we stopping for?
And it's all like, all of a sudden we just start going, right? And it's like, well, there's nothing even here. Well, why'd we slow down?
Well, just what's funny is if you ever watch from above, or if you've seen the statistics or the examples of why traffic jams happen, it's like a car stops and then every car behind it now has to stop. And now to get going again, that car has to get going. And then the one behind it takes a second to get going, and you're losing a second on every car behind it, right? Whereas if everything's linked together like a train, everything moves in unison. The first one moves and the one behind it is part of it, so it immediately moves with it. There's no delay in the car behind it. If every car is connected, they all go and you just go. And it's just, you know what I mean? There's no delay. Yeah. Everything goes. Mean.
Yeah.
And so, it would be, and then you join in on it. It'd be like, okay, I got to join in. It's kind of in Minority Report. The car's just coming and everything moves. Right. Everything's super efficient. And think of how efficient we could be. We're already working from home, but now I could be working while I'm traveling. I could be reading information on the what I'm going to do wherever I'm going, right? Because I'm not driving. I don't have to concentrate. Everything's, you know, the society's more efficient. Everything's cheaper. Everything, you know, it's not cheaper, but because they'll find a way to charge us more. Yeah. But you know what I mean? It's going to be safer. Not saying there won't be accidents, but I bet you accidents will go way down.
It would be way down. Yeah. I mean,
right. Human error is the biggest error.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It's like once you take the human element out of it, things get a lot safer.
Yeah. And that's definitely going to be, you know, that would probably be AI too, right? If it controls all the cars talking to each other and deciding what's going to be the best way around to get to where you're going and through the traffic or whatever it's doing, and you know, going with the other cars saying, hey, I'm going to slide over this way and go here, where you don't even think about that, right? It's just doing it. It's just taking you to your place.
Right.
You know, it's going to take you, it says it's going to take 20 minutes to get there.
I'll be there in 20 minutes.
Yeah, 20 minutes. Or, you know,
do you remember, this is so funny because it's all tech, it's all fun, but do you remember earlier GPS would tell you this is going to take you, say, 2 hours to get to, okay? Mm-hmm. So you'd get in your car and you'd try to beat it. And
right? You're going to go the speed limit, right?
Because it was based on the average speed limit of the between the two destinations, right? So they'd say, okay, so you drive, and then it got a little better, and it would actually give you a little bit closer. So now instead of saying 2 hours, it would say 1 hour and 40 or 49 minutes, because it actually knew the exact speeds of each road. So now you can take into, okay, well, I'm going to, on this road, it says I'm only doing 45, but I'm going to do 55. So now on that road, I'm not really speeding too much, but I can beat it. Now I can beat it. You can't beat it anymore because it already knows the averages of everybody, what they're going to do.
Oh, right.
It knows the traffic that's in between. We're already using all of this stuff. Now just put it into the car and let the car take you there.
Oh, and I just thought of something. Whenever it's all automated like that.
Yeah.
Speed could be way faster, right? Why not?
Yes.
You could, instead of 55 or 60 on the highway, it could go 100, right?
Yeah. There's not, I mean, you just.
Why not?
Shoo, right.
It's all controlled. You know, you don't have to worry about whatever. So that may make things much faster, right? To go somewhere, because once you get on the highway, the Autobahn, right?
Boom. Yeah.
if it's clear the road, it maybe it'll be like, hey, I'm going to go 150 miles an hour, whatever, you know.
Yeah,
you
the
know?
Car feels this is a safe speed anyways. I'll get you there. I'll get you off the road, and it would do the math, right?
Right.
It'd be like, all right, I can have you in the car for 15 minutes, or I can have you in the car for 25 minutes. That's 10 more minutes of being on the road, 10 more minutes of something else going wrong. Hey, let's get you there in 15 minutes, and I can do it. It's actually safer. It's crazy. But What's funny is going back to home theater, all of this stuff is like, remember we were talking about TVs and getting back to, like you said, like before HD, those TVs, like you could have bought a TV in 19 color television in the 50s. That television could have lasted you 50 years and you'd be able to enjoy the same content at the same quality for 50 years.
Yeah.
It's only been about 20 years since then. And think of how many iterations of televisions we've had. That's what I was saying.
It's been going
crazy.
Since we went to HD, it's just been, you know.
Right.
But I think they are out of, like, 4K. I think that's it, right? You know, 8K is only going to make sense in a big movie theater cinema, right? I mean, with those big, you know, IMAX screen or whatever kind of thing. That would make a difference, right? But at home,
for
I don't know.
Us, the consumer, yeah.
And not unless at some point you get your whole wall can be a screen, right? Just boom, the whole screen, the wall turns into a screen, right? Or something
like
that.
Like Total Recall.
You know, right.
Yeah. Where you're like,
and, you know, you're just taking a whole wall. There's no projection or whatever. It just boom, comes up. And, you know, it's pretty big. that I could see maybe, but you know, that would be, you know, you're talking 200-300 inches, right? Or whatever.
Yeah. I think that's, you know? Yeah, that's where 8K might help.
Yeah.
You, but we're right. So far away from that.
We are so far away
from that. The practicality of it, because we literally don't, I mean, unless you're going to turn your wall into it, we don't have the space because we haven't been designed to have that kind of space in our living spaces. Right. Because like, I mean, John has a 123-inch screen in his living room. But how many people have that ability? How many people have 123-inch blank space where they could throw up something that big? Yeah. That's rare now. Never mind.
In the living room, right?
Unless, that's what I mean.
Does he have a screen that drops or something? Or is it
a no, fixed it's screen? It's a fixed screen. Oh, yeah, it's a fixed, ambient light rejecting screen for his short throw projector.
Okay. And oh, he's got short throw. Okay.
Yeah, he's got a short throw projector sitting, you know, so, and I mean, it's a great compromise for a living room theater to get you that big screen experience. And I mean, you need two things, wall space and a partner that'll allow you to do it. And it's like, I mean, it's hard to get one of those things. Never mind both of them.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you, like, speaking of the big screen, like, you know, I keep reading that movie theaters are talking about getting these like mini LED or something screens now instead of projection. Would you, I don't know how, this is almost like that debate of high frame rate, right? Would it feel like a movie theater if there's no projection? There's just a
big
LCD screen or whatever.
No.
Screen. I'm sure it would look gorgeous, but I'm like, I don't know if it would feel, because like HDR, we've discussed this before. Like I think you like it, but it takes me out of the whole thing. It just looks too, I don't know what it is. It just doesn't look, it just looks too real for me. You know, it looks like you can tell they're acting. You can tell the sets look like sets, right? It doesn't look, you know, like a movie or whatever, TV show.
Right.
So when I hear them talking about putting these, like, you know, screens in, I'm like, I don't know if that's going to, that would just, I probably would go see it, right? But I don't know if it would be, feel like, it would just be weird, you know? I guess maybe I might like it. Maybe not. You know, it might be the new thing, right? You go and say,
Let me give you an analogy that I think is very apropos. Centuries, thousands of years, we drew, we painted. They invented different paints. They invented different ways of preserving it, right? We ended up with, for hundreds and hundreds of years, oil paintings. Oil lasted longer. We got great art out of it. We were able to get quote unquote photographs of it. And then we invented the camera. And now we don't need that anymore. So is it more lifelike to look at an oil painting, or is it more lifelike to look at a photograph? Photograph's more lifelike. Mm-hmm. But the painting is the art.
Painting always, for sure is art, yeah.
Correct. These movies are art. I'm looking for what the artist can do with these movies, what he can do with the technology. I'm not going to poo-poo the next generation because photographs are art as well. And you can
use,
you can use it to document reality, or you can use it in an artistic way. So I think we can do the same thing with HDR. I think we can do the same thing with 4K, but I think we can do it with our projectors as well, or our displays. And you could, here's the thing where I'm sticking up for the future that I'm with you. I'm not necessarily going to like, okay? But what you can always do with the new tech is you can always duplicate the old tech. So you could take your OLED television and you can hang it on the wall and you can watch something in 4K HDR and they actually have it. You can actually hit a button and make it look like a beautiful oil painting.
Yeah. I have, my LG has the screen.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
So you can actually show the old tech using the new tech. If you particular, like now this is one of the debates that goes back and forth, and I found that for people that are cinemaphiles that want that home theater experience from going to the theater when you were a kid, where you're looking at the screen, that's where the JVC Sony debate kind of where the people fall. The people with the Sonys, the more people I've talked to are like, it just feels more cinema like, where JVC feels more OLED like. You get a better black level, you get, and they're both, and again, I get crushed for this, they're both very close. But overall, the Sony feels more like that going to the cinema and getting that, you know, and dare I say washed out feel, where I don't think my Sony is washed out by any stretch. But you know what I mean? It's a more cinema-like feel.
Yeah.
Let's jump ahead. Let's take the projector out of it, and we've jumped ahead to those panels you're talking about where you're going to go to the movie theater. You can always calibrate it to look exactly how you want it to look. It doesn't have to. You could take a JVC and you could actually get the JVC to look like a Sony if you wanted to. Because all you have to do is turn the contrast down slight, ever so slightly, if you want it to match. By the same token, it's like, but what the Sony, and that's what the JVC, you can't take something and bump it and make it more contrasty. You know what I mean? You can't make it, you can't make an oil painting look like a, well, actually you can. I had that project. You had to paint and make it look like a photograph.
Oh, I've seen some of those. They do. Yeah,
correct.
Do and really you can.
And they yeah. Were, yeah, exactly.
Amazing.
But that's an art. But yeah. at the same time, but do you see what I mean? It's like, I'm not afraid of the future, but I do love the idea of that projector behind me. I love that light in the window.
That's
in the
what
back.
I mean.
I'm not saying I love that. It on the wall.
Oh yeah. It's the feel of it. Right.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I may be fine with it. Like what did you think from the, when they went from film to digital, what did you think of that?
I loved it. I thought it was a great idea. I thought, because just think of it as a consumer yourself. I could totally relate to it, because what I used to do to get images, like in photography, you'd go through rolls and rolls of film just trying to get the right picture. Right. And I'm not doing it on the scale of what they do to make a movie. Now, digital enables you to get just the right shot over as many takes as you want for far cheaper. Mm-hmm. So, and then never mind manipulating it on the back end, because I've done a lot of my own developing and stuff like that of pictures. So can you, and then editing film. I did that for a wedding, and I used to shoot weddings and then put it onto VHS, but then to edit it and how you had to manipulate that, you know, how do I cut the scenes? This was long before digital. So editing stuff like that, it's like once they went digital, I was like, oh my God, why don't I go back into that again? It's there's so many different things. It was such a plus. And it's why everything is advancing so much faster, because now everything's digital. You can boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
I love it.
I thought for the cinema and the theater, right? I mean, I remember going to see, you know, if you didn't see a film within the first couple of weeks and you would go, this film would be so scratched up. And so, I mean, the print would be pretty worn. With digital, man, you could go anytime and it looks pristine, perfect, right? Yep. That's what I really liked about it. And the image was solid or steady, right? With projection film, it would kind of, you know, move a little
hesitate,
bit.
Burn.
Yeah. Oh, you know, it would kind of shake a little.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I haven't seen a film in a long time, like actual film, but I think it'd be kind of cool to see one again. But the digital is so much nicer, you know, because it's, the picture's always perfect. Right.
Right.
And it doesn't get worn out. And not to mention, they were able to switch to digital sound, you know, uncompressed sound or whatever. So that made the sound much better. So that I think was a good thing. And it's, of course, you know, Hollywood likes it. Like, I think they don't have to print film anymore. They just ship us a hard drive or whatever they do, you know, to the theater.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well,
probably now a lot cheaper.
Now I don't even know if they ship anything. They can actually just, you know, send, you know,
I think some of them download from a satellite or something. I think they are still very, locked down. They don't want that stuff to get out So it's, you know, highly encrypted.
Yeah.
And I think that'd be, you know, I would love to just for fun to work at a movie theater, you know. I never did that as a kid. I think back and I thought, man, I should have, when I was a kid, I should have worked at the theater, you know, because I could have saw free movies, right?
Yep.
And then I know. Be around an environment that you enjoy, right? And even now it's kind of like, almost like, yeah, put me, I'll work for free, right? Just stick me up there.
Yeah. Do you take volunteers?
Let me, wait a minute. You guys, I got to tweak. You guys, the volume's too low in this theater. I got to tweak this.
Yeah.
See, put this in or whatever.
I know. I feel like I'd be doing too much tweaking. You know what I mean? Be like, buddy, you're a ticket taker. Get out of here. Yeah, but well, trust me, you're doing this all wrong.
I should say, you know, sometimes, you know, I don't know if you've ever been to movies lately, but sometimes they'll turn down the volume because people complain, you know, and then you go back or you might be the next one to see it. They don't turn it back up or whatever.
Right.
And you're like, this doesn't sound, you know, sound right. Now, you know, like if you go to Dolby Cinema or IMAX, you know, those, they don't mess with the volume. They use a set of reference and they don't, you know, I don't think they mess with that. But the other theaters, you never know what you're going to get, right? You go in there, they could have it turned down, you know, 10 dB or whatever. Yep. So that was another kind of thing that was kind of why I won't, you know, I don't want to spend good money and then go, I want to hear good sound, right?
Yeah.
You got good sound at home with a good, decent picture. If I'm going to go out to the movies I want it to be something that's going to be on par or better, right, than what I can get at home.
Yeah, absolutely. So. And it's getting, you know, harder and harder to beat what we have at home. It used to be we're trying to get close to what they have at the theater. Now I'm just trying to find a theater that can get close to what I have at home. And it's harder to find. Dolby Cinema is the only one.
Dolby and, you know, IMAX. IMAX is very controlled too, right? As far as they dictate, you know, how it's all set and everything. Same with Dolby. They have the standards. So the other stuff is, you know, the theaters have their own like little premium screens, but they control that, right? So you don't know how they're gonna, you know, determine how they do stuff or whatever. So I do like the Dolby and IMAX because it's like a standard, right? You know, it's going to be, the presentation is going to be at least, or should be, you know, if it's not good, you're going to call Dolby and complain or call IMAX and complain or whatever. I'm sure they'll, you know,
it's closer to the reference that we know. And it's not like a proprietary to like the like Showcase or AMC or something like that. Cause AMC has their own theaters, but they also have, I think they do carry Dolby Cinema theaters as well.
Yeah. It's only there. I don't know how long their deal is, it's strictly, AMC is Dolby. No one else can license it. Well, I think in the US, outside the US, I think it can be licensed for other people,
maybe,
but they have some kind of deal here. I don't know for how long. So no one else will be able to do it until I guess maybe they did a 10-year deal or something. I think they basically told Dolby, we'll build so many theaters in so long. And I heard it's really expensive to retrofit those to Dolby Cinema. It's like millions of dollars, I think, or whatever. I wish I'm sure some other theaters might, you know, get the Dolby Cinemas if they could, right?
Right. That's the thing. It's even those new digital projectors and stuff that they have to run. They're hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh, right.
And they're like, to get these in for the better quality. And it's like, you read the articles and listen to these podcasts where people talk about this stuff. And they're like, is it worth it? Because like how many how many tickets you have to sell to compensate for that when it's a limited few that even appreciate it.
Yeah.
So like, what do we do? What are they doing? And I don't blame them. I don't blame them. Most of the population, again, getting back to going from SD to HD for people like us that were, you know, old enough to know the difference, old enough to have the experience to know like, bam, look at the difference here. You know, cause I know, I'm sure a lot of listeners were young, so they didn't at the time that it happened. So they didn't have the appreciation for it, but you're going to nod your head when I say it, but most of the population didn't see the difference between HD and SD.
Yeah,
because a lot of people will watch an SD and raving just because somebody told you this is HD, and be like, they'd get their HD cable system, right? And be like, buddy, that's a different channel. This is SD.
Well, it's part of the problem too, right? They didn't have,
but they didn't know.
They had to maintain those like separate channels for the HD, right, and SD and all that.
So
that made it a little bit more difficult.
If you went through that and tried to convince people like, no, that's CBS. Yes, but that's not HD. You're watching the football game in standard def. No. Oh, I'm telling you, this is HD. And they'd yell at you. They'd be like, no, I paid to get HD. And I'm like, yeah, but the HD channels are 700 channels away. Like, you'd be like, you're watching, like in our area, CBS was channel 4, right?
Yeah.
So you're watching the NFL on channel 4. That's the standard definition version. And they're like, no, I paid for HD. Yeah, here, you've got to go to channel 744. That's the, see, it says CBS HD on your program guide. That's the HD channel. What have I been watching? SD. And you're telling me how great it looks. It's SD, the same damn the, thing pictures, you were always watching, right?
With the picture stretched out, right?
Right. And it was all stretched. But these people would tell you that that looked great. It was great. They loved it. And they were so happy they made the switch. And now I'm not amazed that people can't see a difference between, you know, disc and streaming, because that's very minor. These people were telling me SD was the greatest thing since sliced bread. And I'm like, that's SD. No, that's HD. You see what I mean? So like, having gone through that, I understand why most of the population doesn't understand the fascination with a 4K disc. No kidding. Yeah. You couldn't see the difference when there really was one. A huge one. You know?
I still think now we're at the point where we're back to like LaserDisc, right?
Yeah.
LaserDisc was a niche format that only certain people, most people nowadays are just streaming, right? I mean, you could probably pick 10 families, and how many of them are actually, maybe one is using discs, right? Most of them probably are like, well, we don't need discs, we can just stream everything, right?
Yep.
But the quality is getting better streaming, you know?
Yep.
It's just, you know, what doesn't get me, or what gets me, is the sound, right? The sound should be so much better. I mean, think about the Dolby Digital laser discs. That was like 320K or whatever it was. It was a very low bit rate, way lower than even the streaming is now. And those sounded fantastic. Where is those?
Well, it was analog.
Even on DVD, right? The Dolby Digital sounded good or whatever. So they're compressing it for the common denominator, the sound bar or whatever.
Absolutely.
Kind of thing.
It's, you think about like why, like a 4K, why 4K discs aren't selling like DVDs do or Blu-rays. And I mean, literally DVDs are outselling both.
It's crazy.
To get the advantage to see the difference in a 4K disc, think of the system you have to expose that to you. Right. So it's like, it just like you and I, we have kaleidoscapes. You have to have a really good system to appreciate what a kaleidoscape can do. I don't even have a good enough system to appreciate fully what a kaleidoscape can do, because I can't, it all these movies are flagged to do certain things that I can't take advantage of.
Oh, I'd love to do that automation. Yeah,
you see
stuff,
but do you see what I mean?
So expensive, yeah.
Exactly. Well, see, and now we are in that part of the market where now that makes us, we should be, you know, I use that to appreciate that somebody that's just watching at home on their 65-inch television in their living room, they're never going to be able to, the 4K disc is literally going to look and sound exactly like the stream to them, because they don't have anything to expose what that disc can do, right? Just like you and I, we have nothing to expose what the kaleidoscape can do over and above picture and sound and, you know, convenience that we get. We just don't have the ability to. Most 95% of the population can't expose what a 4K disc can do. So it does literally look exactly the same to them on a, to a stream. So, you know, why would they spend the money on it? There's nothing there. Literally.
Well, not to mention a lot of people just watch them on their phones, right?
That, well, yeah, now you're going even lower, right? Yeah, so it's like, yeah, you just stream it and you're getting everything at home. So you, it's a very expensive endeavor to dig out the quality that you can get in a 4K disc. We're all doing it, but I'm not amazed that most people don't. I mean, that's, it's common sense. They're not spending the money on the rest of the system, you know? So it's,
I was going to change the subject a little bit. Your son-in-law, you remember how we were talking, he was a young guy. What, where is he at right now? Is he still kind of slowly working on putting a theater in, or what is he, what's he kind of focused on right now? Is he kind of just going to put his foot in the water, or?
Oh yeah. No. He's, we're still working on his living room. We've got his OLED mounted, the wall that has his entertainment center on it. I got, that was the priority to get done, painted and everything, so we could get everything there. So he actually, Danny Speakers donated him some stuff after hearing him on the podcast. Yeah, it was really cool.
Great.
So he reached out to him, cause we're all local. So he reached out to him. He donated some speakers. He's toying with some ideas. He actually just went to his parents' house a couple of weeks ago, or maybe a week or so ago. He texted me and he's like, I'm at my parents' house and I'm grabbing all their old HD gear. And it's, so, you know, it's all got HDMI, so it's probably 10 years old or so, but he's going to toy and tinker with stuff like that.
Sure.
He's looking at different speakers and layouts, and he's actually thinking of buying some stuff that he's interested in and trying out to just to try and get a feel for different sounds and stuff. So yeah, he's, I mean, he's still, well, we're still really dealing with, you know, finishing remodeling the house, but he's tinkering and, I mean, he's doing all the things I did when I was a kid.
Yeah, I know. That's great. The next generation, right?
Yeah.
I think we need more of people to kind of keep going with theaters. I know it doesn't seem as popular as it used to be. It used to be like, it was kind of mainstream for like home theater stuff, but maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago, I remember it was kind of a big thing. Now it seems like it's kind of died off a bit.
Well, I think there was a big push to get people involved. And then what they realized is, okay, all the people that are going to get involved are involved. So I'm sure there'll be another push coming for the next generation. People like, you know, my son-in-law and that age. Now, when they start to come into more money, there'll be another push, I'm guessing. Yeah. I don't know. We've been in it so long that you just see the ebbs and flows.
Yeah, I mean, and you're right. You know, it's, all of us, you know, pretty much started piece by piece.
Yeah.
You know, little by little. It was never, you know, if I went back to my theater from 20, 30 years ago or whatever it was, you'd look at it and go, oh, you know, what is that? But it was probably great back then, right?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, it was better than the TV speaker, right?
Yep.
You know? And, you know, you were, if you didn't have Laserdisc, you're VHS Hi-Fi, right? You know, you're getting good sound. Hi-Fi or
VCR. That's what I said.
So so that's good. I'm glad. Hopefully he'll come back, or you have him back.
Oh, yeah.
And he can kind of go over where he's at and how he's been. And,
yeah,
you know, as far as his journey. Now, is your daughter, how much is she into the, and this is more of a guy kind of thing, it seems like, you know, home theater and stuff. Does your daughter, you seem like your daughter seems a little bit more into it. Is that, would you say?
Well, he's lucky, you know, as far as a guy, you know, into home theater, his wife, my daughter, is very accustomed to what he's gonna do, right? She watched me do it all growing up. Right. So I've been doing it my whole life, and I've been dragging it. She loves going to the movies. She loves movies. She loves the family part of it, the event part of it. She did midnight showings when she was a little kid with me.
Okay.
I used to take her to we did the entire Twilight series at midnight, because that was back in the day when, you know, you had to do things at midnight. And so she did all of that. So she did movie nights here. She loves watching movies. So she's going to be very appreciative of what he's doing, but she's not as interested in it as he is. So that's, you know, and that's fine, but it's going to be, he's going to have an easier path because she was brought up in this world.
Yeah. She's right? More used to that. Yeah.
So, but she is, it's funny listening to him, like, I'll be working on the house and doing something like, you know, doing joint compound on the drywall or something and listening to them. And he's like, but I want to get this. And she's like, do we need that right now? Do we need it? Like, so she's trying to manage the budget and he's trying to get stuff. And it's so reminiscent of when I was a kid, when I was their age. I mean, they got married at the same age that my wife and I got married, 23 years old, you know, and they're just like, and they're just young kids. They just adopted a dog, a rescue dog.
Okay, good.
So that's nice. They're loving that. And my wife and I wanted to, but our landlords wouldn't let us. So we got a bird. And I don't think I've ever said this on the show before. This might be a first. Do you know what my bird's name was? My wife came up with it.
I don't think you ever mentioned it. Or not that I've ever heard.
We got this bird in, we got married in 93. We were living in the apartment. They wouldn't let us get a cat. And they wouldn't let us get a dog, but we could get a bird. In 95, we did get a cat. They finally, the landlord allowed us a cat. The cat's name was Sybil because it had multiple personalities and it was crazy. So we named it Sybil. It took us 2 weeks and then it was like crazy running around. And my wife goes, thanks, Sybil. I was like, there you go, Sybil. The bird, Dolby. We named it. It was a little blue, you know, parakeet, had his little cage. Name was Dolby. He lived 8 years. Yeah. So we got him in 93. We got him when we first got married. So got him in 93. He died in 2001. He came to this house and died a week later.
Oh,
He was in the cage. Yeah, something like that. It was like, I remember driving him out here in his cage next to me, and it was strapped into, I had a, for my work truck was a single pickup, like a single seat pickup truck.
Yeah.
You know, no back seat, I mean. Mm-hmm. So he was literally strapped in next to me with the seatbelt on his cage, and he's just sitting there driving along. And we were here a week. and his cage was in the corner of the room in our living room area. And all of a sudden, he just went,
boom. Oh, wow. So, yeah. Okay, so it wasn't like he died overnight and you woke up.
I was there. I was there. Like, oh, buddy, sorry. So my kids were really young at the time. I took them into the backyard, and we had these two rocks that they, in the backyard area, big, big rocks that when they built the house, they had to move them back there. So dug a little hole. We had a little ceremony, and we buried Dolby in the backyard. A year later, my buddy and I are in the backyard clearing the property even further, open it, not taking trees down, and we've got a backhoe in, and we're manipulating. So he's digging. My buddy's in the backhoe, full-size backhoe, and he's moving these rocks, and he's digging up the earth, and all of a sudden you see this blue thing out of the corner of my eye. This Dolby goes rolling down the hole.
Oh, no.
And I was like, I said to my wife, I'm like, hey, my son's standing next to me, and he's probably 4 years old at the time, five. And I'm like, hey, Joe, why don't you go ask mom? We need another shovel, buddy. He's like, all right. He's like trying to be the construction. I'm like, get him out of here. And I'm looking at my buddy Charlie in the backhoe. I go, the bird, because it's way down in the hole. He sees it and he takes the backhoe. And you know how, like, you can use the backhoe arm to slide a rock?
Yeah,
he takes this big giant rock, like almost instinctually. He's a really good operator, and he goes, whoosh, boom, and he drops the rock on it so Joe couldn't see it.
But
like a year later, there's Dolby just, I mean, he's still blue, but he's just dirty, and he's like, boom. I was like, oh no, I didn't want to shock the kid, but
oh my gosh, that's funny.
My wife named him, his name was Dolby.
So, oh,
and that goes back to 93.
I would have thought you would have named it Dolby.
That's what, well, I was just trying to come up with it, and I'm like, let's do something that we want to do. And I said, home theater, hockey, what kind of name can we come up with? And I wanted to share it with her, And it's even better that she came up with it, because it's not like I forced home theater onto her, but she knew, you know, this is what we do, and this is my home, this is my hobby. So we were like trying to pick one, and she was like, how about we do Dolby? And I was like, yeah, I think it's better that she did it, because it's like, that's how much influence home theater had on me and projecting it to her.
Well, so, you need another one now. You can call it Atmos, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm afraid Dolby it'll be Atmos. Too loud. I'll Dolby. Get the DTS one that's really, you know, too much bass.
Oh, that's cool. I like that.
Yeah. So, it's like, kind of bird was it? 8 years. It was like a little, what do you call them, budgies? The little parakeets you find at the store. Okay. Like, okay. And they're like, what, $25, $30 or something. You get the cage, you bring it home. He was great. He used to sit on my,
so he would fly shoulder. Around.
He'd fly around the house, and then like every now and then we'd let him out and play with him. But then when we got the cat, Sybil, we knew we didn't want Sybil eating table food. So what we used to do is when we sat down to eat dinner in the living room, two of us, we'd have our TV trays and we'd watch TV, you know, as a new couple does. But we didn't want the cat bugging us for our food. So we'd take Dolby's cage and put it on the floor. And Sybil would just, like, she'd pace around the round cage. She'd jump on top of it and, like, paw at one side. Dolby would move to the other. But the cat left us alone. So we're like, this is great. Poor Dolby's being terrorized. So
you probably couldn't let that. Well, you probably had to put the cat away if you let the bird out.
Yeah. Sylvester and Tweety situation going on. That wouldn't have been good. So, So there's a home theater tie-in to my first pet as a married couple.
So there you have a dog now, right? A lab, or what do you have?
I have three dogs.
Well, you have three.
I have three dogs. I have a husky, and she's named Romy after Natasha Romanoff, because she's a Siberian husky.
Okay.
So that's Romy. We have Stanley, named after the Stanley Cup. His name's Lord Stanley, because he was born the year the Bees won the cup in 2011. And then we have Franklin, and that's the town I was born in, and I just got him 2 years ago in July. That was a birthday present for me, so they gave me Franklin. So we named
what him. Kind of dog is that?
He's a mix. He's just like it's hard to describe, but he's about 50 pounds.
Okay.
So pretty mix. Big. Yeah. He's a decent size, very muscular, same actually weight as Romy, the husky, but the husky looks much bigger because it's such a fluffy, furry coat.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And then Stanley's a little tiny dog. That's like, he's only like 25 pounds, but he's just like a mini pin slash, you know, little Yorkie terrier. He's not in good health, poor guy. He's on a lot of medications. Yeah, he's got a heart issue. He's got heart fluid, so he's 12.
Okay.
So, yeah, he's probably not making it a year. We're doing everything to keep him going.
Yeah.
But he's in good spirits. He's like, he wouldn't know the difference, but we do, because we know the diagnosis, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, he's got like a terminal issue, but he doesn't know. So that's good. So he's happy as a clam.
Right? Yeah. They just overcome things, right? They don't.
Yeah.
They lose a leg or whatever. Like, okay, well, I'll just walk on three then.
Yeah. Like, gotta keep on going.
It seems like they just kind of adapt and you know,
and just keep on going.
Resilient. Yeah. I mean, I think my stepson and his wife, their dog, I guess, went blind, but it's still.
Yeah.
As long as that furniture doesn't move around, it kind of just knows its way around and does its thing or whatever. And he doesn't really seem to care. He knows how to cuddle up with him when he wants to or whatever, you know, kind of thing. And so no cats then anymore, huh?
No, Sybil died. She lived to be 18. She died the same year as my shepherd mix died in 2014. Ooh. They both died in 2014.
Oh man.
That was my wife was really upset about that one.
That's a tough year. You got two of them same year. Whew.
Yeah. Sybil. Well, she was old. She obviously 18 years old.
Yeah.
And, but she lived a long, good life. And then she went in, like, I think March of that year. And then Gabby, my shepherd mix, who was like literally my best friend, she went everywhere with me, mountain biking, swimming. I go for 2 mile swims and she'd try to go with me.
Huh.
We had a place up in Maine and I'd swim to the island, which was only a few hundred yards away, hundred away. And she'd just go, I'd get in the water and start swimming and she'd just swim right alongside me. I'd try to go kayaking. She'd go with me, but she'd
nice.
The week she died, I went for a run on Tuesday, running down the road and I looked behind me. Now she was 13 years old for a shepherd.
Yeah,
she was 75 pounds at the time, but she had all she was a big shepherd, but she had floppy ears. So she was almost like she was a shepherd beagle mix, they think.
Yeah,
but it was like 99% shepherd and like you got the 1% beagle and it went to the little cute floppy ears. So I'm running down the road and I look behind me and there she is trying to keep up. And I was like, what are you doing? So I had to turn around, take her home, put her in the house, and I go for my run. But she was great. But on, I think it was Thursday of that week, we got up in the middle of the night, and she just started crying. So we gave her some medication. She's still crying. Took her to the vet. They were like, here, we'll give her something. And they were like, this should do it. And she quieted down. And that was at 3 o'clock. And then my wife and I went to dinner and my son called us and said, yeah, she's not doing well again. So we ended up taking her to the emergency room and they were like, yeah, what ended up happening is she went septic. Her like intestines had burst inside just from age. Nothing happened, nothing, just laying there. It just happened. So she had the pain she was in and that was it. It was just like, all right, you could spend $5,000 and we might get her another month, or you can just put her down. So we just said goodbye, you know, but it was sudden like that. And you were like, one day she was great. And then the next, like I said, a couple days early, she's trying to chase me down the road. And then next thing you know, it was like, oh my God, she's gone. And it's like, I kind of preferred it though, because I've done the other way where you watch the dogs and the cat age forever and you wish. You know, you're like, oh, I feel so bad for you, but this was so quick. It hurt like hell, but it's quick that you know, they had a great life and then it was like, breaks. It's over.
Yeah, so, that's tough.
Yeah.
My last dog, we had the, you know, she was old and we had a, you know, it got to a point where she was just, you know, like, you know, just so old, she couldn't barely get up and move around or anything.
It's hard to watch.
And so it's like we had to, you know, and man, you know, my wife was like, that was a few years ago. My wife's like, oh, we should get another dog. I'm like, oh man, I don't know.
Yeah.
It was so tough. It was so emotional. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I love having a dog around, but it's just like, oh man, it was so, hopefully I'll feel a little different here soon, but I'm just like right now, I'm like, oh, it was so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
You know, I've lost dogs before, but this last one was just like, oh my gosh, it really
brutal. Did
something to me, you know? So that's cool. You know, you got.
I rebound as fast as I can. Yeah, because we got when Gabby died in May, and then we got Romy as a puppy in July. Because the other part was we did have Stan at the time, so Stan was used to having another dog around, right? So you're like, now even you noticed it when Gabby died, you noticed Stan was like, where's my big sister, you know, watching Gabby raise Stanley as a little puppy and watching her treat him like, you know, she was a 75 pound dog. He's this little 4 pound little puppy. Right. Yeah. And the way she treated him, watching her raise him, Gabby raise Stanley, and then we were looking forward to after Gabby died. We're like, you know, what would be nice for Stan is let him
raise,
you know, pay it forward. And now he's 20 pounds raising something that's going to be like 60. And it was like, and the poor little Romy is this little puff, you know, as a puff, like a husky puppy. We got her at 8 weeks, and watching Stan duplicate all the things that Gabby had done to him, right? And you're like, oh my God, look at, he's doing the, like watching dogs teach each other how to fight, how to play, yeah, how to do these things.
Yeah.
And it was fun watching that. And now we see Romy trying to do, Romy and Stanley doing it to Franklin. And it was, it's a lot of fun to do. And it takes that, I mean, I'll never forget Gabby, but it takes that, a little bit of that sting out, because yeah, now you're like, you're they're family. And
sure,
and,
oh, for sure, yeah.
Right. And it helps move Gabby forward, right? Because now you're like I said, you're watching Stanley do Gabby things. So you're like, it's really pretty cool. So yeah, it's a, you know, and I'll do it again. You know,
is one of them home theater? Do they like to go in there and watch movies with you?
Romy does. My husky, every morning I come down, it's like, it's almost like I have to watch a movie, because I have to do something in the theater every morning now, because she's become such a creature. Obviously dogs are creatures of, we all are, but she'll wait by the basement door, the door that goes to the basement. So I'll open the door and she'll go down the stairs and she'll go right into the theater and lay down on her chair right next to me. And she just waits there.
Okay, and good. Then, so you got a home theater buddy then, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. She goes, okay. She's not as much as Gabby was, but she goes a lot of places with me. She'll follow me anywhere. Like, she loves to hike. She loved to do that. Franklin, I'm taking mountain biking now. So he loves to go with me. Yeah. So that's my mountain biking buddy,
you got your mountain biking. You got your home theater buddy. You got, what's the other one do?
Stanley's just like, he's just cuddles, loves to lay up next to you, yeah, and just cuddle with you, and that's all. That's why my wife loves it. She's like, yeah, he's like our cat. So, but yeah, there you go. Like, I mean, yeah, but yeah, I've tweeted that out, the pictures of Romy sitting with me. Paul Hurt from over in England, he has a husky too. And we talked about it when he was on, and we talk about his husky, and it's like, he does the same thing. So it's like, huskies are awesome dogs. They're definitely my favorite breed that I've ever had. Gabby, I would say, is my favorite. Like, I'll never have a dog like her again. The way we bonded was crazy. But husky, I'll definitely get another husky. Huskies are amazing dogs with amazing personalities. So, but yeah. So you want to wrap up on that? Wasn't really home theater wrap up, but hey.
Well, yeah.
BJ, this has been awesome. It's, as I told you before we started, it's exactly what I needed. This was an awesome, I love these podcasts where we go on to tangents like that. So that's what it's about. We're more than just our theaters. We did a lot of home theater talk, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was awesome. I really, really appreciate you coming on, and this is, you know, going on the tangents with me.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me, and once I get into discussion, it's a little more. Hopefully, the discussion was interesting enough for people.
I'm sure. I mean, hey, like I said, some people are gonna think it's like listening to paint dry and Dolby Digital. Other people are gonna love it, and those are our listeners. So I'm not worried about it in the least. You did great. We had a great conversation. It's funny. I'm finding more and more, it's these off home theater conversations that people are more engaging with, because we talk home theater all the time. It's what's expected. But like, having people on and talking about other things, I get the comment, and people are like, oh yeah, yeah, I do that too, and I love this. And it's like, Paul and I talked about our dogs and we did all that stuff. It's great, great stuff. But yeah, our histories and our experiences, BJ, are very similar, and I love flashing back to the oldies like that.
Yeah.
And people are doing it for, you know, like, you know, they appreciate hearing it if they didn't get to experience it. So it's fun. So it's cool. Thank you very much for, you know, taking me down memory lane like that. It was a lot of fun.
My pleasure.
All right.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, BJ. We'll be back. I'll be back later tonight as you're hearing this, I'll be back later tonight at 5 p.m. live stream on YouTube with John on Tuesdays. This is Takeover Tuesdays. So live stream on Tuesdays at 5 p.m. and then podcast airs on Fridays. So check us out all in those places. And if you're not listening to the podcast, you know what to do. Push play. Thanks, everybody.
Hey, Fred.
This has been a Hey Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.